Before we start, I'd like to establish if we all have the copy of the agenda for this meeting. And if you don't have, could you please indicate by show of hand so that you can give you. There's a gentleman over there, does he have a copy of the agenda? Is it only one person? Yes? Okay. Thank you very much. Shall we start? We are now on item number one, which is opening and welcoming remarks by the chairperson. I would like her to open by observing a moment of silence for prayer and meditation. Shall we close our eyes and do it as said? Efficient and sustainable public financial management, given that this is fundamental to the promotion of economic development, good governance, social progress, and a rising standard of living for all citizens. As we deliberate, the intention is to explore and formulate concrete proposals that will ensure our efforts at radically transforming our society is realized. Let us have a fruitful deliberation. Indeed, we're looking forward to constructive and a meaningful engagement with the department. Well, thank you. Please feel free to visit our meeting. We will then move on to item number two. Maybe if I could bring in some little change between one and two. Maybe we should do the introductions. I'm sure you have no objections to that. After all, we need to know each other better. All right. I will then start from the honorable members. You know these the members from. Do you know the members? Because I'm the only new person here. No. All right. Let's do introduction. Starting with the honorable members. Let me start with myself. I am Yvonne Nkwenkwezi Khosa, but I'm commonly known as Pinky Khosa. I'm trying to say Yvonne is a Christian name. If you go around looking for Yvonne, you might struggle a bit. But if you say Pinky, people will know who you talk about. Thank you very much. I'm the new chairperson of the committee, Honorable Whip.
I'm Nda Twabaza.
The Whip of the committee. Over to you, Honorable Chope Stole.
Good morning, chairperson and our visitors. My name is Sheila Colleen Kensan Chauvet-Toy.
Mon Alman, my name is Teliwe Kimadu.
I'm Sheila McGinnis. All right, over to you.
I'm Sonia Lamanana, member of this committee.
Thank you very much.
My name is Michael Fieger, member of this committee.
Thanks,
Dr. McLaughlin, also a member of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. McLaughlin.
My name is Natasha Nhlangweni, but when the committee is still your flow. But my surname is Nhlangweni.
Nhlangweni?
Yes.
Okay.
I still always struggle to pronounce it as well, but it's Nhlangweni.
Cannot be true. Practice makes perfect. Must practice. All right. Thank you so much. Mrs. Nhlangweni, am I right? Yeah. Okay. All right. We will now move to this side. Over to you, madam.
Okay. My name is Linda Legupega, the CFO of National Treasury.
Come again, ma'am.
Linda Legupega, the CFO of National Treasury.
CFO of National Treasury. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Honourable Members. I'm Lindy Bordovic from the Accountant General's Office for National Treasury.
Thank you, ma'am.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Tari Mgomezolo. I'm the Deputy Director General for Corporate Services in the Treasury. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Luyanda Mugu. I am the Audit Committee Member.
Chairperson.
I'm representing the chairperson. The chairperson can make it today, but I'm representing her.
Morning, Honourable Members. The name is Sisejo Starelbere. I'm the Head of Internal Audit in the National Treasury.
Morning, Chair Members. I've got a little bit of chair.
Sunny August, I'm the head of the Parliamentary Office, Ministry of Finance.
Now we know who is sitting in this meeting, and I'm going to further invite you to feel even more free now, because you now know each other. All right, okay. So we then move over to, apologies.
Good morning, Chairman. Good morning, Honourable Members and Guests. We have three apologies from members. We've got an apology from Mr. Sheikh Imam, who's on oversight with the Police Portfolio Committee. We've got an apology from Honourable Sokonyane, who's on oversight with the Health Portfolio Committee. And an apology from Honourable Kwangwa, who is at a conference in Germany. From the department side, we've got two apologies, one from the Audit Committee Chairperson, and an apology from the Director General. As indicated before to members, he's attending another meeting and will join the meeting later.
Thank you very much. Any apology from the department? I know that we are come again.
Okay, thank you just to reiterate what you just mentioned. This delegation is supposed to be led by our Director General, Mr. Lungisa Buzile. As honorable members may be aware that there is a Treasury Committee in progress it is in that committee with cabinet, but he will join us as soon as it is done. Thank you.
Any apology from the ministry? Because we expect also the political heads to be here. Either the minister or maybe the delegated deputy minister. Very important that they also come to this meeting.
On behalf of the minister, the minister is in the same meeting as the director general, and our honourable deputy minister Jonas, he is abroad. He left yesterday for a meeting in Addis Ababa.
Alright. Well, honourable members, we just received apologies. I'll now hand over to the members to Honourable Dr. Fike and Honourable Kislo. I must still practice your same name. Okay.
Yes, Madam Chair, I know the next step is to accept these apologies now. We know that where is the minister and the deputy minister. That is not what we asked for. Wanted an apology. So if the apology, and then I believe the apology should be in writing, and that's the only apology that we agreed to. So that's in my view. Thank you.
Okay, Honourable Low.
Thanks, Chair. I find it strange that every time it's become a pattern that we have apologies of such nature, of pages that are attending other meetings and so forth. But I think, because this is a hearing, and I would think that this hearing takes priority to any other meeting, and I just feel somehow we are taken for granted as this committee on as the appropriations committee, that seemingly they can just apologize and not attend to our meetings and another meeting takes priority. So I really think you as a work needs to start communicating to this to cabinet that it's really uncalled for. Our meeting also takes priority, and it seems it's becoming to be a pattern, and if we're not going to put a stop on it today, it will continue. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Dr. Madoke.
No, thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I agree with Honourable Low. However, I think when we came to this meeting, we got an apology very early for the DG. We even discussed in the committee whether we must continue with the meeting or not. We ended up agreeing ourselves to say that we have to agree because he will join us late. So I agree with his sentiment, but to this particular meeting, we knew that the DG would be here. Thanks.
Maybe I should apologize for Honorable Low. When we received the invitation, it was read in the previous, not even yesterday, last week, it was read in the meeting, and then we discussed on whether do we stop them or do we proceed. Then there was consensus of on us proceeding with the meeting and allowing the DG to join us late. But then we take note of your concern, because we can only address this comment there, this department said all day, yes. So we will find a way of correcting this. Honorable, do you still want to, or want to add your voice?
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to say maybe there should be a vigorous communication between our staff and the staff of the department that we are inviting, so that when they feel that the accountable people are not going to make it, maybe we shift the day, because really the aim of calling departments here is to hold them to account. So it doesn't help us to be deliberating just for the sake of the ritual. We don't want to conduct process. We want to make sure that they hear what we see on issues, and issues get addressed. Many times the president has asked us to work differently in this period. And in any democracy, if a head of state makes an appeal, everybody draws the line. But I'm not feeling that, and I would appeal that departments take this work very seriously.
because of one thing, we are talking about scarce resources in a time when economic growth is very difficult. So we are very serious. We follow the money in this, and we don't want to be trying to. We want to make it happen. Thank you.
Well, honorable members, do you want to have a second bite?
Yes, sorry, Chair, just to get in. The reason why we're saying we want also the DGPF, because look what happened in the case of basic education, where we as a committee have found out some problems. So then we give him recommendation, and he would have said, oh, fine, I will take the decision, I will release the price statement on the teachers that was not paid. So now, it's not that we are saying they don't know their work, or they, because what we are going to give to them, yeah, they will still have to go to the head of their department and ask, will we be allowed to do this? But when the DG is here, he can immediately take the decision and say, fine, we will investigate it. It's not, we don't in any way question their skills or their qualification in particular to give us the answer whether we're going to whatever we're going to ask them. But we really have to put emphasis on that the accounting officer needs to be here. Even at least a deputy minister as well. They need to be here. Thanks, Jim.
Take your points. All members, I really will be happy if you can now make progress. Proceed to the business of the meeting. Agreed. Thank you very much. In terms of our agenda, we are now on item number 3, which is presentation by National Treasurer. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We did circulate the first set of our presentation as per the timelines as set by the committee. As you would have noticed, that was a more detailed presentation. Subsequent to that, we have shortened it. Suffice to say, we have not changed anything that we said in the longer version. We just stopped this presentation that is now going to be displayed there. Deals directly with the request of the committee when we got the invites. So this particular one will address areas of under and over expenditure for last year's quarter 4, this year's quarter 1, performance information exactly the same way, and all the other bullet points. So just for that idea that there is no difference between what we submitted previously and now, we just try to make this deal with the points, and as the committee have requested to stick to the maximum of 12 pages, which is a difficult task. So our numbers are a bit the other way around. Instead of 12, we have 21, so we have moved the numbers around. So I'm going to hand over to the CFO to take us through the financial matters, because that is her area. She will move on until where she is comfortable, and then at any point where she thinks she needs to delegate upwardly, I will proceed with the presentation. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, honorable members, for giving us the opportunity to present. Thanks to our DDG. In quarter 5, you will see the slide, so we will start with quarter 4 in terms of what has happened in terms of the variances that we have. Overall, you know, per the agenda is that we need to explain the over expenditure and the under expenditure. In the quarter 4 of 2015 and 16, we had an under expenditure of 340 million, and that one, obviously, those were the audited figures. And what caused that, obviously, overall as a department, we actually underspent by 1.1%. The major contributor to this expenditure, you will see, is actually Program 8, which is our technical support and development finance. That is where GTEC is. So what contributed to that is the ECFF, which will be the Employment Creation Facilitation Fund. So 90% of that underspending is based on that. So as you will see also, we've highlighted the reasons as to why there was an underspend. Of that 283 million, 235 was actually contributed to the transfers that could not be dispersed to the Jobs Fund partners, as obviously for the Jobs Fund they have their own stringent criteria that must be met before obviously the funds can transfer. So those conditions were not met, hence we could not transfer the funds, hence the understanding. The next one is for the operational budget of the GTEC. So for them to obviously follow up on the project, we also give them the funds to run the project. 22 million of that could not happen because obviously what we do is the recovery invoice. So the GTEC would issue the invoice and then they would have to obviously provide evidence that they have done the work and then the funds get dispersed. However, it must be noted that those are part of the funds that have been declared back to the fiscal. Also in the same category, we also have the operational issues, which is the indirect grant for the NDGP, which is the Neighborhood Development Grant. Also, that one, there were delays in terms of dispersing the funds, as obviously as I said earlier, that municipal procurement services, there are certain conditions that need to be met, and if obviously the department is not happy with the conditions that need to be met, and also just tightening our financial management, we do not transfer those funds prematurely. The last one on the fund also was on the municipal transfers that was withheld to the municipalities because they did not comply with the DORA requirements in terms of the reporting. And obviously what we have done then since then, what we're doing even now, we're monitoring the spending because we're having constant meetings with the respective programs where we make sure that we try to track the progress on the project to make sure that they would meet the set targets. Obviously, there will be unforeseen circumstances where they can be met, where that cannot be met. So we are being prudent by prioritizing some of this because, for example, we're currently sitting in the middle of September. By now, we know how many months are left before the year ends, and you can set, check the targets and projects that have been set. And obviously, we monitor that we can reprioritize the funding within the department to avoid, obviously, that the underspending and where necessary, obviously, and make sure that we curb the overspending. Chair, if you would allow me, moving to the next slide. The next slide is basically just highlighting, because we thought also just to show the committee that, you know, we're trying to keep the consistency within the treasury. So this slide is just looking at the outcome that we had in the previous year. That will be 14-15 and also what we had in 15-16. And you will see there are no major differences when it comes to that. So the spending pattern is still aligned when you compare quarter to quarter. Chair, I don't know if I would pause or we'd move to quarter one if there are specific questions for quarter four.
Shall we receive both briefings and then embark on a discussion?
Thank you, very honourable chair. Moving to quarter one, as you will see, we have an outstanding of 175 million, and that obviously is contributed to mainly restart and sequence. First, I'll start with understanding on program one, where we obviously had various programs within or various items within program one. That will be the corporate services and the administration of the National Treasury. The issues of IT, because the procurement, all of the servers that we have and infrastructure that we need for IT needs to be sourced, obviously, to a certain extent, sometimes it has to be imported. So as a result, there were delays in receiving those goods. And as a result, we had an underspending, but obviously those at the stage have been sorted. Also, as the infrastructure for the disaster recovery, we needed to be sure that we don't just spend funds because they are requests. We need to confirm and also satisfy ourselves as finance that the spending obviously is necessary. As you would note, obviously, what we've done going forward, that has been sorted, and we have received those invoices, and the payment has been made. Also, just high level, it's also program 7, which obviously underspent by 57 million, may not have it in your size. We just bought for transparency, let's also mention that. That one is usually, it's an item that is based on one member claim. So we don't have much control of other than making sure that as the treasury, the controls and how they pay are in place, which is what we're doing. And as a result of those tightened controls, they would have to be make sure that whoever pays obviously is the rightful person that can benefit from that. Moving to the overspending, we'll start with program 5. This was mainly caused by the 461 IFMS invoice. that the service provider wanted to be paid earlier, we had to negotiate, because obviously there would have been a lot of money that we would pay had we not paid in that particular time. And also brought the representative from the unit, should there be specific questions on that. 461 was therefore broken into two tranches. The first one, there was a requirement that it's paid in April, which we actually paid towards the beginning of May. And the second one we just paid, which obviously concludes what we owe the service provider for the new ICMS system. And as a result of that payment, we are overspending, but we have requested, and we, from the time we actually started this process, we have been engaging with public finance, and we have submitted this in our adjusted estimates, and it's been considered for approval. The last one will be on program 6. This one is an overspending in the current financial year. However, it's the previous year's expenditure that, because of financial constraints we had, we could not pay then, we paid it this year. Again, whatever differences that would arise from the program have been submitted to the adjusted estimates. But I would also like to highlight to this committee that as finance, we've been proactive, and certain foreign currency-based transactions, for example, when the rand was strengthening, we were able to pay that and we were able to make those savings. Hence, obviously, will be some of the priorities that we will do through the adjusted estimates. And then moving into the last slide, it's actually giving the same picture in terms of the spending patterns of the department. If you would look at the same time in 15-16 for quarter one versus the current quarter, which is our first quarter, as much as we have overspent because of the one transaction in the main, which I permit, however, the spending patterns of the department are still on track, and they are aligned toward how we have given this spend. And obviously, because now of the cost containment measure that the department is also embarked on, we are saving quite a bit than when we have last year. As we see that some of the spending, for example, in last year, we were already 50% in this quarter, but we see that also as well as 24%, for the financial intelligence that was transferred. However, here also, if you look at the spending patterns, that we are spending lesser than that simply because we're monitoring how we're utilizing the funds. Thank you, Chair. I would hand over to our DDG to present in terms of the performance information. Thank you, Honourable Members.
Thank you. Over to you, DDG.
Thank you, Chairperson. The performance information for the department head in the previous year, 135 indicators. That is quite a number of indicators in the department. So we do have a detailed document, obviously, that mirrors the annual performance plan. You would know that the beginning of performance information is plain for it in the annual performance plan with smart indicators. Therefore, what we're depicting here is the overall summary for the department, but of course we have the detailed document that is a voluminous one that will show all the 135 indicators. So at the high level, and these have been audited obviously, the department has achieved in total 93 indicators out of the 185 ones. We have partially achieved 34 and only 8% of the whole department in the indicators was not achieved. The partially achieved is defined in the framework as anything that is between 50% and 99%. So it is important to show that, because a person can say, what do you mean you have partially achieved on a project? So the framework specifically says anything between 50 and 99. But what we have tried to do, if we can move, so I link these two together, move to the next slide that shows, no, move to the next one. Yes. If you go to this slide, on the left-hand side, it shows you what is partially achieved there in terms of the ranges from 50 to 99%. It gives you a very clear indication that our partially achieved is actually most towards over 70% to 99%. So it is not, at least in our view, a concern that our partially achieved are at the lower end. You notice there that from 50 to 60, there's only one. 60 and above, you have 6, 10, 8, and 9. And we can get into the specifics. So can we go one back? Yeah. So still on quarter 4, we demonstrate here the program that 2, 4, 6, 8. The 8 programs. Treasury is made up of 10 programs, but the last two, as you would be aware, program 9 is the South African Revenue Service, which comes an account on itself. And then program 10 is the State Security as well as the Financial Intelligence Center. So those are the entities that report on their own. So the 135 indicators in the treasury would be from administration to the technical support, only the 8 programs. There at the bottom, it is showing the program where do you have the red. So it means those 8 that were not achieved at all. One, it is from program 3, that is made up of budget office, public finance, and intergovernmental relations. And then the other area is financial accounting, the Office of the Accountant General, and the Office of the Chief Procurement Office. Most of these findings are within the reforms that the Chief Procurement Officer is implementing in terms of enhancing supply chain management. So issues like the review of the SSSA, automating the system, and the likes. So these are the only two areas where, but we'll go into detail if specific questions are asked. Then the not achieved, which is the next page, thank you. I have already spoken to the partially achieved. The 8 that are not achieved at all are as a result of the following reasons. Where the output and approval process is outside the treasury's control. Example will be where we submit bills to parliament with a set date in terms of when we want them to be promulgated, and we find that the process is longer. Maybe what we can, in future we must, and this is what we have discussed at ECO, if there are projects or outputs that rely or they are outside our control, at what point do we say we have done, we have achieved our 100%? Should it be when we submit to Parliament that may be seen as not being taking accountability? So that is one of the things that we need to discuss. As I'm sure honourable members are aware, the area of performance management is still an area that really needs thorough engagement between the various spheres of government, including the Auditor General. I will move on to quarter 1. In the first 3 months of April to June, we have achieved, we are, in terms of quarter 1 alone, we are at 67% of all the indicators. And again, the pattern there is achieved 82%, partially achieved 32%. Sorry, it's not percent. These are the actual numbers. They are not percentages. It can be confusing. Not achieved 8%, but you also have not yet reported, because this is only the first quarter of the financial year. We have all the indicators shown here. Then you notice that in this first quarter, you have more red than the previous fourth quarter, which was a cumulative for year to date. And there are reasons for the rates being more than generally. I think it is a question of planning. Sometimes our plans are such that in the first quarter you start to realize that maybe we were ambitious with the timing. We still maintain the targets, but the timing maybe should be towards the second and third quarter. But as I say, it is a learning process. We won't hide and say, you know, come with excuses. It's not how we want. We want to learn and improve and have better planning. It boils down to that. Again, summarizing the partially approved but partially achieved, you can see, again, the trend is still not there. You have your 11 and 13 in the 80s and 90s. Your 50 is just only 3, and then 61 to 72. Below the next slide is more about the reasons why we could not achieve some of the targets we set for ourselves in Program 1. I won't go through all of it. I'm sure we will engage it better when we take questions. The first one as an example is, at the Treasury, we prioritize top secret and secret vetting for people who are exposed to some information that is sensitive. Therefore, we identify the group of people and we send ourselves targets to have them vetted. So for this particular year, our 100% was split across all the four quarters, hoping to achieve 25% first quarter until we reach the 100%. But as you can see here, we're doing very bad. We only achieved 9% instead of 25%. Challenges here are the backlog that we have with the state and security agency. I think there is progress. However, this process of getting, especially at the two levels that we have identified, is very detailed. From the completion of the form, the process that you go through, until you are issued with adherence or not. Which other one? Let me explain number 1, 2, 3, where we're saying we needed to have 4 provincial visits. I mean, we needed 9 provincial visits for a particular program, and at this point in time, we have not really done it because we said that this was for the whole year, but the program was not specific. So we still say in a specific year, we need to have all these 9 provincial visits, but in the first quarter, nothing has happened. So this 9 is across the year. It's not just for quarter 1. So maybe we need to be more specific as to how do we spread the 9 visits. That is just one example. The other one that says not applicable in this quarter, it was a knowledge sharing of internal rate and risk management. We had 1 for the whole year, but we did not specify which period exactly. Hence, not applicable in this quarter, but this must happen in the year under review. Then the highlights for quarter 1, across all the 135 indicators, we say we have trained 928 officials in the IDM toolkit, 90% funded positions and retention very high at the Treasury, 13% higher than expected uptake of staff development programs, 100% of government liquidity requirements have been met, so we have not gone to the market and not come up with the coupon that we have set for ourselves to achieve. So far, we still go to the market to borrow money. We get the money that we need. Interactions to manage and ensure effective relations with credit rating agencies. I'm sure honorable members are aware with the set of circumstances and events that made us to establish some working and understanding with credit agencies. But of course, as we would always say, we work for the benefits of the government, not the credit rating agencies, but you need a fine balance there. Procurement plans are published in the e-tender portal, which is part of the Chief Procurement Officer's reforms in terms of supply chain management in government. 49 transaction advisory projects registered, 685 officials in national and provincial spheres of government trained in the public financial management. The next part basically talks to Treasury's input to the outcomes of government. We have four outcomes that we directly or indirectly contribute to. The first one is outcome number 4, decent employment to inclusive growth. We are saying in this area, our contribution to achieving economic growth and inclusive growth and employment are the following indicators. The net loan debt, we had a target of 42%, we are at 44%. Value of government gross annual borrowing, we had a target of 204 billion, we are at 102 billion. Total number of new jobs created as a result of the trust funds, we had a target of 140,000, we have created 142. Number of training and placement through the jobs funds, 160,000 to 223, and the other area of the trust fund. So these will be more deliberated upon when we do the jobs fund presentation, as was requested in the invite, progress of the jobs fund itself. Another outcome we contribute to is outcome 8. Sustainable human settlement and improvement of quality of household life. Outcome 9, responsive, accountable, effective and efficient developmental local government. And outcome 12, an efficient, effective and development-oriented public service. So what are the contributions of the Treasury in this regard? We had a target to have third party invest in this area of human settlement and improving household life. Our target was to have a conducive environment that would make an investment of 3 billion into the economy. We have overachieved there. We had actually, the environment is such that we have exceeded the 3 billion to 4.2 billion. The number of long-term urban regeneration projects registered, 18, we have achieved the target. Neighborhood Development Partnership, 40, we have exceeded it, 61. Transversal contracts for strategic housing, target of 160, we are at 223, this is the work of the CPO. And then the number of individuals we train for financial management reforms, target of 70, we have trained 83. So this is our contribution to these other three outcomes of government, which is outcome 8, 9, and 12. Q1 basically is a replica of the last quarter, but obviously with what is happening exactly in Q1. So I don't want to go into the detail. It is a similar thing, different numbers. We can engage through question and answer. Then the last but one part is performance of conditional grants. The request from the committee was that we should detail underperforming conditional grants
that are administered by Treasury. In that regard, we have four specific conditional bonds relating to local government that are administered by Treasury. The first one is the local government financial management grants, that is the FMG. The second one is the integrated city development grant that we call ICDG. The third one is the infrastructure skills development grant, the ISDG. And then last but not least, the Neighborhood Development Partnership Grant. So these are the grants that are administered by us in the sphere of local government that are conditional grants. So where are the areas of underperformance in these grants? I'm going first to the financial management grant. We are under spending by only 3% in the financial management grant. So we have used this grant appropriately to train, to enhance skills in local government financial management. These are the numbers of the capacity building initiatives, and that has resulted in better audit outcomes for local government. The 3% is the underperformance in this, but then I guess that's what the committee was interested in, to say, don't come here and sing your praises, tell us where you have challenges. I think that was more what the committee is interested in, and the way we have read the brief. The next one is a bit the integrated city development grant. Here we have a huge challenge in the sense that underperformance in this particular one is at 79%. And you would notice that we have mentioned those particular municipalities that were affected by this underperformance. That is the Buffalo City, Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela. Bay Municipality. And then the other municipality was the city of Tshwane, due to lack of understanding of the integrated city development grant. The infrastructure skills development achieved 99%. It's only 1% of that we can refer to as underperformance. Very, very minute. And then the last part, the Neighborhood Development Partnership Grant. We have performed 100% of non-financial targets. The only areas of underperformance there would be we did not transfer all the 96%. In the 100%, we have rather transferred 96%, but still we have achieved what we needed to achieve. And the last part, 76% of funds spent. So the underspending was due to project constraints, e.g. weather, unexpected discoveries, procurement issues, and capacity constraints. So these are the four grants that are managed by the National Treasury, and we have tried to demonstrate the areas on which we can improve. But to a large extent, you would notice that these grants have delivered to a large extent what they were intended to do. This brings me to the end of the presentation on performance information, service delivery implications for the National Development Plan, and underperforming conditional grants. The one area that is outstanding is the jobs fund. Thank you, Chairperson.
Is anyone who's going talking to the jobs fund? Yes, we can show.
honorable members, just so that we don't confuse anybody, that is not it today's shortened version, but it is included in the long presentation that we submitted previously. So that is what Mr. Donaldson will be talking to us about. Thank you.
Operates through a series of calls for proposals and then allocations to projects. There are 5 calls for proposals that are now in the implementation phase. There is a 6 that is currently being evaluated by the investment committee. So here's a summary of where the program has got to. There are 6 funding rounds up to now. A total of 104 projects that have been approved, and 97 of those are being implemented already. Following approval by the investment committee, there's a process that usually takes a few weeks or a few months in contracting. These are quite large allocations of money to NGOs or to businesses, and so the details of the contracting are quite important. $5.5 billion in allocations to the portfolio, and these are all projects in which the project partners are expected to contribute from their own resources in various ways, and so there's further $6 billion. So there's just under $11 billion that is committed in the projects, the 90-odd projects that are approved to date, 100-odd projects that are approved to date. Dispersals take place over a period of time. Most of these projects undertake to implement over a 3 or 4 year period. Private sector partnerships, 44, so just under half NGOs and some public sector agencies are project partners. The original job creation target to the program of 150,000 jobs has already been exceeded by the commitment in existing projects. But of course, you have to wait till the project is completed before you really know what its impact has been, and so we track those numbers quite closely. But over 150,000 people have benefited from training opportunities. There are a number of internships and short-term job opportunities that have been created. Permanent jobs, longer-term jobs, are the main objective of the program, and most of these new opportunities go to young work seekers. Over half also go to women. There's a range of salaries and remuneration attached to jobs, but as you can see from the data here, these are for the most part work opportunities, not at the top end of the income distribution, that's not what we're aimed at, but they are secure and work opportunities within an income range that is comparable with services sector or the more labor intensive parts of manufacturing. Quite a large number, over 12,000 small and medium sized enterprises have benefited through the Jobs Fund support, which is an enterprise development program, and disbursements and enterprise development are approaching $2 billion now. Here's a summary of the data. Some of that was in the original slide, so I'm not going to go through all of that again, but it just gives you a summary table of the performance of the program so far. There is a predominance in project partners of Gauteng and Johannesburg-based organizations, but not all of these are just focusing on job creation in the Gauteng area. So there are a number of, and the Jobs Fund is seeking partnerships with larger organizations that have a broader geographic reach. And there you can see, although I don't think we've achieved quite the balance of geographic distribution that we would have hoped for, there nonetheless is a spread of projects across the country. And in respect of job creation, that's what the picture looks like. The Free State and the Northern Cape not well represented in job creation projects so far, but I think it's important to remember here that the agriculture round, which was only completed earlier this year, it was the round that was undertaken last year, is only now beginning to come through in the numbers. Quite a wide range of economic sectors that are represented. You can see how training activities are an important and substantial part of the program, was around last year, agriculture is the largest sector in which there are projects in progress. That might be last slide. Yes, that's last of the summary data. May I say, Chair, in conclusion, that the Jobs Fund is a substantial intervention. It's spending now around R1 billion a year. Disbursements are not even during the course of the year, but most projects receive disbursements on a quarterly basis, and new projects come into the program, so the disbursements pick up. Spending last year was just over R1 billion. It was just under R1 billion. We were expecting to disburse about that this year. But although this is a substantial program of spending and support for particular projects, really its most important intent is to pilot new initiatives and to provide learning opportunities for how we go about our government partners with the private sector and NGOs in supporting training and job creation better. And it's 30 days still, but we have undertaken evaluation of first and second rounds of program. We've certainly learned something. I think if I can mention one particular area in which we really are learning about how to do things better, the work seeker programs, which involve identification of young people, providing them with good testing of their skills and competences, so guidance in respect of occupational and career opportunities based on well-developed evidence-based testing, provision of work readiness programs and learning opportunities, and then targeted placement programs in partnership with businesses. Programs that do that well can make a really big difference to the opportunities of young people. And I think that tells us something about the challenges we face in developing employment services and in improving the links between schooling, our college-based vocation education programs, learnerships, the activities of CSIS, and school development activities funded through the National Skills Fund. And so as we learn the lessons of projects that we've undertaken through the Jobs Fund, so we're beginning to work with the departments involved to look at how government activities, in particular in this area of work readiness and the interface, the flow from schooling into work opportunities can be improved. And there have been some quite exciting, quite large projects that are scaling up, that are providing opportunities like that to 100,000, 150,000 young people a year. We will have to start looking at how those are funded on a more permanent basis, a sustainable basis, once the Jobs Fund comes to an end, and that's part of the work of the next few years in the second half of the life of this initiative. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Well, I take it that we have now received all the presentations, and honorable members, I know you've been listening carefully. I'd like you to reflect on the presentations. Let's start with the first one. Your fourth quarter and your first quarter financial performance report. Yes, I am informed that the hardworking DG is here. Welcome, DG. I don't know if you have anything that you want to say to us before we engage on a robust debate on the presentations that you got from your department.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Nothing safe to apologize for being held up, but we're dealing with the adjustment budget process with the Treasury Committee. So, just.
Okay, thank you so much. You received your apology last week, which to me displayed professionalism, informing us about this, and it enabled us to discuss that correspondence in the meeting and get a consensus on you joining us here. Thank you very much. Honourable members, over to you. Let's reflect and engage in a constructive and a meaningful engagement. Honourable Member Manana, Honourable Member Dr. Peek, Honourable Member Rowe, and Honourable Member.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me first start by welcoming the presentation from Churchy. There are a few questions that I would like to pose. The first one is with regards to the first quarter, the fourth quarter with regards to the South African Post Office. Treasurer, the department should announce to the committee on the issues given that significant money was given to the South African Post Office. As far as the Treasury is concerned, what is the state of financial and operational affairs at the South African Post Office? In the view of the Treasury, how has the issue surrounding the South African Post Office affecting Postbank? If I may find a from Treasury, do you think citizens are still keen to invest in the Postbank? The second issue, Chairperson, is with regards to the grant that was withheld from the municipalities for the 9 campaigns of DORA and the NDG. The Treasury should provide details pertaining the report of non-compliance on the part of the affected municipalities. Which are these municipalities that are not complying with the relevant legislative framework, and what is being done to ensure that such non-compliance does not occur? The last question, Chairperson, I would like to pose is in the first quarter report, is with regards to the safety medium that the Office of the Chief Procurement Office is requiring as an additional budget. Where are they going to get this money? Because they have reported that there is a need of that money. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Member Manana. I just want to consult with the Honourable Members. You see, yesterday we got a lot of questions, and I'm not sure the core of those questions to respond. There were too many. Now, I then thought maybe if we allow a member to come in and then they respond, another member and then they respond fully, and then will that be okay with you? Honourable Dr. Vick?
My observation of what happened yesterday, most of the questions that were posed were not answered properly. But I don't know whether the suggestion that the person is saying is going to be supported by the committee, but I was going to support it.
Members, I think it will be to help us to achieve what we want to achieve at the end of this meeting. Effective, and also allow other members to make a follow-up on the same question, and then we move on to the next question.
I seem to be not supporting this decision.
You're not supporting it?
No, I'm not supporting this decision. Look, as long as, you see, the problem is that we will have specific questions. Maybe that's the approach we should make, is make sure that the questions are specific and not give a speech, and then when we get our responses, then get direct responses instead of getting a whole parable in response to our questions. It's simple as that. The problem is that when the responses, we get the responses from the other side, they I'm not saying treasure in this case, but the problem when problems are created is that they end up being stories and we don't even get answers to our clarifying seeking matters.
Okay. Any other view? I can see this, I'm sorry, but we should also to find an effective way of benefiting from this engagement. Yes, Dr. Matope?
No, thanks, Honorable Chair. I don't think support Honorable Chair. I think we must raise specific questions and we can
answer,
because I don't think we will complete the question that we need. I'm speaking and the other one.
Thanks for that. We've made your point. So shall we proceed in the same manner? Method of work that we've been using all along. Right, second, it was Dr. Fieger, right? Yes, Dr. Fieger.
Thank you, yes. Okay, I'm Julia, I'll be very brief. I've just got a few issues that I'd like to address. If I refer to slide 5, one of the reasons that has been given for transfer payments being withheld to municipalities is non-compliance with DORA. And now what happens is the money is being withheld. Is that all that is done, the money withheld, because at the end of the day, the perpetrators and guilty parties here are the officials, and at the end of the day, the community suffers. So, I would just like to know, is there any other action that is taken to ensure that this does not happen again, because I see there was a rollover that was requested and not granted. And I am in agreement with the the rollover not being granted. So, I think that something else, some other action should be taken in addition to just the withholding of the money. Then, just to comment on slide number 4, I noticed that there's two comparative lists that are being compared. It would be useful if you use the same colors in your pie charts, because now, first of all, it's small, so it makes it difficult to read it. I will be able to read it after time, but just looking at it, one is light blue, one is dark blue, one is orange, one is blue, so just some assistance with regard to that. Honorable Chair, slide number 8. Now, I noticed 4 in previous presentations by Cecilian again. I'm not so sure if I agree with the partial achievement, because if you have to do something, then either you do it or you don't do it. You know, you have to build a dam or you don't build a dam. Now, I understand. But I would suggest rather, I would be more happier if something could be, I mean, if it's 50% complete, surely it's not achieved. And so I just have a bit of a problem with the partially achieved indication, that indicator. Then on slide number 14, which interestingly, the DDG said that the credit rates regarding the credit rating agencies, that you don't work for the credit rating agencies, you work for government, yeah, of course, but at the end of the day, it's the credit ratings that affect the cost of our debt, so we have to consider the credit rating. So I have a problem with that statement that has been made, that we don't work for the credit rating agency. Agreed, but it is affects the cost of our debt, and as we all know that the cost of our debt is spiraling out of control, so it needs to ensure that we have a good credit rating. I see in a recent report on OJ that, again, the credit rating agencies are looking at our SOEs again. It's going to affect the cost of our debt, because ultimately, even though it's the SOEs that their credit rating has been downgraded, well, possibly, guarantees are issued by state. So, ultimately, it affects the state. On OJ slide number 15, I've got two more. No, that's slide 15, beg your pardon, slide number 18. I see the figure net loan debt to as a percentage of GDP. Can we just get an indication what year is that? Because I thought it was a little higher than that. Currently, I don't know that it's still at 42.2%, and so this is just for clarification. And then the last one, Honorable Chairperson, is slide number 21 regarding the underperformance with respect to the NDPG fund. I think one of the reasons given is where now can we just get more detail? Because normally it's inclement weather that causes delays in infrastructure spending. But according to my knowledge, I know we are currently experiencing an extended drought. So can we just get an indication about whether is it too hot or too windy? Because really, that doesn't sound as though it's the correct explanation. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Thank you,
thanks, Chair, and thank you to National Treasury for the presentation. Some of my other questions were covered by my previous colleagues on the one of the funding that was withheld, so I won't go into that one. But I'm going to ask you, refer back to your slide 3 on my one, and I think it's the first page, slide 3. On top, you say the payment of capital assets for the procurement of infrastructure systems, server within the ICT unit, and then remedial action that can be avoided by procuring assets on time in the future. But now, I read the remedial action, but why was the assets not bought anyway on time? So I think that remedial action there doesn't hold water. There needs to be consequences for the individual there, because to give a weak remedial action like that, I really think that remedial action doesn't hold water for us. So I think I will have your indulgence in that one, please, if you can explain to us. And then on page slide 6, the 3.3 million on operation leases and property payments due to outstanding invoices of June 2016. We had a similar situation yesterday of outstanding invoices. And you, as National Treasury, need to take the lead. Your department should take the lead in this. If in your department you still have invoices, the delayed payment of invoices of 3.5 million, I mean, what example do you give to other departments? So I think I will need the DG's indulgence in that one as well. Consequence management. Then on slide 9, Dr. Vic talked about the partially achieved. I feel the same sentiment. We can't have a partially achieved. It's either you achieved it or you haven't achieved it. Partially, what is partially? And you don't tell us in terms of, oh, we have partially achieved it, so this is what we have done partially. If maybe your site can give us an indication, okay, this is what we have done, this is outstanding, then we can maybe accept your partially achieved. But if your slide is like that, partially achieved, by when are you going to achieve it? That one as well, for me, I think we'll need to have the explanation on the partially achieved one as well. And then there was a one on slide or page 20, where you make mention of percentages there at the bottom of Buffalo City, Nelson Mandela. But I see this as a trend now to departments. They don't say it was the actual value of the money. They rather put it in percentages. If we can actually have, whether it's 1,000 rand, where's the 100 rand, but I would like to see the percentage of the money, because that percentage can mean anything. So I would like to see the actual percentage of that money. And then even on page 21 or slide 21, under performance 96% of funds transferred. you know, what is the actual value of the 96%? Because we want to see the money, or I, like me, I would like to see the money. I don't want to see 90% or 3%. How much value is that? Because when we're going to go and debate it in Parliament and in the National Assembly, we don't talk about percent, we talk about the money, the actual total of all of this. So I don't know what is the new trend of the department to report to us, Chair, in percentage and what the actual value of the money. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. We'll now call upon Honourable Member Dr. Madoke.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thanks for the presentation and welcome to the city. Honourable Chair, I want to echo my concern also on the slide number 3 around the 23.4 minimum that was withheld to the municipality. My concern, Honourable Chair, is one, is that when the money is being allocated or indicated to the municipality, they do the IDP telling the people that this is what is going to be happening. And then at the end of the day, not happening. Maybe that is why sometimes we have got this service delivery protest, because the councillors go to the community, they do road shows on IDP, do road shows on the budget, and all of a sudden is withheld, which affects service delivery, which affects job creation. I want to check, the Constitution of the Republic is clear that the national government, provincial government, have to assist the municipality. It's not the first time that the treasurer is withholding the money for the municipality. What are the interventions for the treasury to assist the municipality so that in future they are not withholding the money, because it's constitutional that they need to assist the municipality. But all the time we hear of withholding. Is the treasury following the money where it's going to check on time before they withhold the money? Secondly, I want to check here the issue of the allocation of 266.8 million allocated to the Integrated City Development Grant. And the department share with the committee the information pertaining to the impact of this grant. In which metro is the grant making the most notable impact? And what is the lifespan of this particular grant, if we can share with us? Same with the local government financial management grant. Also, whether it is making any impact, because we see that they have spent, all the municipalities spend it. But is there an impact on those particular grants? Maybe, Chair, allow me to take this opportunity, because the DG is here. It's not part of the presentation, but I'm just taking an opportunity that the treasurer is here. I want to check, there is a contract that is given to WBHO as well as Royal Bafokeng. This was awarded for 25 years contract to operate the office of the state of South Africa. One of the companies that is here, which is WBHO, is part of the 15 companies that was signed by the Competition Commission. I want to check how come that we are still giving the government work since they were found to be part of those companies that was found. And also, why is this particular contract is 25 years? When we are talking about the job creation, I'm saying this because the treasury does oversight of all the budget that is going out, even in the contract. You know, it can just have 25 years of a contract just to operate head office of the state of South Africa. Really, it's something to me that is really unacceptable, because
there are a lot of people that can be employed, and this particular contract is long, it is 25 years. But if you don't have the answer now, because it was not part of the presentation, why would you please to get that particular answer? Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you. I will now call upon Honorable Member McLaughlin, and then I want us to allow the department to respond, and then we have another round, so that you don't miss out on some of the, you know, because when there are too many, we also are creating a problem there. Agreed? Thank you very much. Honorable Member McLaughlin, thereafter we will then hand over to the department to respond, and we have another round.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try and keep it brief. Just by way of a comment, I know that because we asked for this to be done in as few slides as possible, I was going to get to some brevity and conciseness, meaning the things aren't always that easy to understand, and so maybe we authors of our own misfortune to an extent here. But if you bear with me, just I have a few questions on the clarity of what is meant by what you're saying here. In slide number 5, under 6, which is international financial relations, we have a variance here of minus 110.5%. My question there is this as a result of exchange control, exchange rate fluctuations, negative exchange rate fluctuations, and if this is the case in the first quarter, is this going to be addressed in our medium-term budget? Are we going to try and cater for this in the future, because it seems to crop up very often that whenever we're spending money offshore, we suddenly fall terribly short, because we seem to think that there are not going to be any currency fluctuations, and we always end up on the short end of it. I know two of my colleagues have already mentioned slide 8 and the positively achieved aspect. I just have a slightly different take on it. When this is a quarter 4 year to date performance achieved, so by the fourth quarter, presumably the target set is for the whole year. So we're talking about an annual target and a performance in the fourth quarter. I'm not sure whether you just reported to us on what was achieved in the fourth quarter of an annual target, or what was achieved for the whole year of that annual target. Because if it's for the whole year, then obviously partly achieved means not achieved, because it's for the whole year. So if you didn't achieve it for the whole year, you only partially achieved it when you didn't achieve it, which would mean 42% was not achieved. But I'd also like to know, what was it you didn't achieve? What targets were there that were set that you didn't achieve? It's sort of a nice way to smooth over it, but we'd like to know what you actually failed at. It doesn't tell us. You say partially achieved, and that might be an uncomfortable question, but we need to get this kind of information. If you look at slide 11, there you've got partially achieved, but this is quarter 1. And again, my question is, if this is what you've achieved in the first quarter against the year's target, then I can understand that some things are only partially achieved, because the year is not complete. You've got another 3 quarters to go. So that is perfectly understandable that you're going to have a fairly substantial partially achieved section. But I'm not sure whether that is what the report is telling us, so I'd like it if you could just expand a little on that and explain it to us. So I have to find my next slide 14. Is slide 14 the bullet? There's one slot here. It's the second one. No, the second one where it says not applicable in this quarter. I see the target there is one. One knowledge sharing forum on IA and risk management facilitates reform levels. Is that target for the year? Is that why it's not applicable in this quarter? Because I am very concerned here. We've had several meetings just lately where the departments come and present to us, lay a fair portion of the blame fairly and squarely on the implementing agents. And if you're only having one meeting with them in a whole year to try and up their game, as it were, then we're falling woefully short. Because I feel these implementing agents really need to be beat up so that they can be accountable, because they seem to escape all the time. The department has to come and sit here and take all the flack. They get flack at the other end because you see our citizens who are not getting the service they need, and they're up in arms because they're not getting what they want, and the implementing agents in the middle just seem to escape scot free every time. They're the ones who need as much training and just beefing up as they can get, and it seems this is a woefully small target, so perhaps you could address me on that one. Slide 15. You say 90.4% of funded positions filled. I would like to know, what is that number? What does 90.4% translate to? How many physical positions have not been filled? On slide 20, I just had a little difficulty understanding what you're actually telling us here. You talk about financial management grant, performance achieved, and then underperformance, a 3% underspend is due to contractual commitments beyond the municipal financial year. I couldn't quite get my head around what we were being told here. Is it because the municipalities have provided money for a whole contract, but the completion date on that contract hasn't yet been reached, so they haven't actually spent the money, but they're still in possession of it? It's been granted to them, been allocated, but they just haven't spent it. Is that what we're actually saying here? Or are we saying something different to that? And what does that 3% represent? I'm trying to support my colleague, Honourable Lowe, and she says, give us the numbers as well as the percentages. Often one is better than the other, but we need to know both, because this is a better picture. In the ICBT, 79.3% of the allocation was spent as at the end of the 2015-16 reporting period. So that's at the end of that particular year. Only 79.6% spent. That's horrendous. Why? What happened to the other 20%? Why isn't it being spent? What is the reason for that? We don't get a full picture. You say Buffalo City 23.2% of what? And Nelson Mandela Bay 29.7% of what? Did not qualify on the weighted average of the built environment performance plan. Is that all we talk about in this particular thing? Because how does that relate to the 79.3%? I'm not following what you're telling us here. City of Tuamia is about 41.6% of what? But that's rectified. Rectified to what? 2.5%? Maybe you could just unpack that one a little for me as well. And then I saw one of those little phrases in slide 21. That I always open my eyes at and look and think, well, there, that could hide a multitude of sins. Unexpected discoveries. The reason given for only 76% of funds spent on municipalities. What are unexpected discoveries? What have we discovered that we didn't expect to discover? Please, give us a little more information. Don't just sort of whet our appetites with these kind of things. And again, it seems, how is it that we are able to achieve 100% of our non-financial target, but the rest we shall fall short on? And I think, how's that possible? How do we get to 100% of a non-financial target if we haven't spent the money? Only 76% spent by municipalities. And I just have a question. Madam Chair, am I allowed to ask questions on the jobs fund performance, or are we just looking to the first? While we're at it. And I just have a couple of questions for Gary today as well, if you don't mind. The second bullet point on page 2, slide 2, we're told 5.46 billion in grant funds has been allocated, another 6.3 billion has been leveraged from the project partners. That gives us a total of 11.7 billion, but to date 6.3 billion has been disbursed. Are we still in possession of the other 7.4 billion? Is it available for the future? Am I understanding correctly? That's the situation. And you speak in the same last bullet point is the minimum wage. Please tell us what the minimum wage is, because as far as I know, we don't get the minimum wage that I know of, and yet you seem to be working with the minimum wage. Please tell us what that is. And then these figures you quote us here for the wages, the 3499 and the 3599 and so on. But is this gross monthly salary? Is that what these wages are? And then you say in the last bullet point that 1.7 billion has been disbursed in support. Can you just tell us what that support is? What has that 1.7 billion done? How has it supported this enterprise? On slide 3, the jobs fund grant disbursed. We have a target of 3.9 billion and actually 3.3 billion. There's a difference here of 578,883. 607. My arithmetic tells me that translates at 8,000 rand a month job to 5,707 jobs that we could have provided that we haven't. Surely in a country like ours where we have a huge unemployment rate, it's imperative that we spend all the money we can on these, on the Dolph Fund, because we must utilize these funds. That means 5,707 people who could have had a job because the money was there didn't, if I understand what I'm being told correctly. And I just don't think that's acceptable. And I'm sure those 5,707 people would agree with me. The geographic spread of projects on Class 4, I just wanted to ask why is there not a more even spread geographically? It seems to be all over the place. Gauteng province, which is possibly the highest population density, but also the smallest area-wise, gets 28 projects, whereas Free State, Limpopo, and so on, only get 3 each. Is there some specific reason for that? And then your slide 5, again, I wanted to know, are these things, is this related, prorated to the provincial population sizes? And if that's not the case, what is the basis of the differential between the various provinces? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much for your input. I will now request the DG to provide response.
Honourable Chair, honourable members, this is the time when I wish the meeting had taken longer. I on the serious note, let me start by saying that I can sympathize with members saying sometimes they prefer numbers to percentages. I guess in future we must give you both. We must give you both. Because I do recall instances where, not necessarily in this community, people say, but this is just that we don't know. At the percentage, we can't tell now whether you are halfway to spending it or not. So we'll give both in future. So that that's the first point to make. The second thing I want to make, sometimes we make mistakes, and it is our fault as bureaucrats, that people remember what you said previous time. You see, what we do, we publish the Division of Revenue Bill. The Division of Revenue Bill set out for the next 3 years all the allocations per municipality. So in a way, we then come here, because we work with these things every day, we assume that the members or the support to them would do the Division of Revenue Bill. We're not going to take up talk about allocations, because it is now there. It's the starting point. For instance, all the conversations or questions around what was located and stuff like that, the answers are there, but we will give them. But what I'm making is the point that part of what I would think, without appearing to suggest our committees to run their business, the support to you must bring the documents when people are coming. You know? Because we don't print them every day. I don't think it would make sense for us to print them every day when we come, because when we're given. So anyway, let me then touch. The SAPO questions took me by surprise. I don't have very, very firm answers on them. I can tell the committee, however, that we are, it's one of those entities that at one stage was in difficulty. There were governance issues that the committee might know. Minister Chele decided to replace the board first with an administrator, and then later appointed a full board. The first one gets interacting with that board and interacting with the executive appointed there is that things are on a path to soundness. In other words, the entity is working both operationally, and of course the issue of finances is going to take some time to really get mended, because it means re-engineering the business and making sure that you can the cost structure, improve the efficiency of the operations, and at the same time you recapture part of the market that you may have lost, say for instance when they had strikes and so on and so forth. So I'm saying, I cannot say I know they will post a smaller profit or this, those effects that I don't have. And they would better be actually answered by them. The same would apply to whether people think then, because the post office at one stage was in the media for negative, for a number of negative reasons. Is it a place to keep your money with it or so or not? What I can say is that the fact that government has at least guaranteed its liabilities
should give comfort to people that whatever they have saved with the post office wouldn't be lost. In the past, they used to pay higher interest than banks, so it was a good thing to keep money there. Now, when we withhold grants from municipalities, we do it with a heavy heart. But we do it because the law would have prescribed. Where I usually answer this is to say, short of forcing us to break the law, and we understand this, because if you say you will give a plan, the plan must show this, then after a quarter you must report, the performance must reflect it, then the next quarter goes. Those are the things that if Parliament has accepted as being reasonable when it processes the bill at the start of the year, we adhere to them during the course of the year. Because if we were not to do that, we would be breaking the law, we would be failing Parliament. Now, that's the first question, part of the response. The second part of the response is that we don't take it lightly, the issue of withholding. The withholding is not usually the first step. It is usually the very last step, actually. First, if people have not complied, you will find, and the law requires this of us, you will find a pile of letters that say, you failed to do this, please do it. You failed to this magnitude or in this way. But of course, ultimately, the withholding is part of the game. Just imagine this. If people knew that although it is written in the law, although it is written in black and white in the law that Parliament has passed, it is not something that gets done, then the system will fall apart. Because people will say, no, they will threaten, but we know that they are scared to withhold. Let's just say that it gets close to the air, they will pass the mass. We just know this. So it does become important for the functioning of the system, the discipline of the system, that when all else fails, we withhold. So it is for this reason then that we would have grants like the financial management grant, where we say to municipalities, to the extent that what they may be struggling with is, for instance, complying with the financial management rules and supply chain management, but we say, here is a source from the national fiscus earmarks to help you get people with experience, pair them up with those inexperienced ones. Let there be a transfer of skills so that in future you are better able to comply with the rules. Now, some people take this and make very good use of it. Others don't. Where then they don't, the ultimate instrument, which is to withhold, does kick in. We'll give the committee a list of the municipalities from which the money was withheld. The 30 million that the CPO wants, I've got 10 divisions under me. All of them always want money. Sometimes I want money myself for the DG's office and the ministry. But Parliament has given a certain amount. So sometimes if the CPO convinces us that what he's doing is more of a priority, saves more money, makes the system work better, you name the things, then we reallocate. But we will look at it in that respect. But it's not a matter for adjustment. It's more an internal process. We will try and improve the office of the pie chart. There are even books written on how these things work, so we will refer back to them. Sometimes they're not a very good way to present things, but other times they are. But we'll try and then make sure that we keep the colors consistent. You know, they partially achieved, fully achieved, things like 8 and 11. It is interesting because
The other discussion that I was in, and I was not even participating, but I was listening to political principals, lamenting the fact that one office that shall remain unnamed here, it used to say, if a building is 99% built, let's say. So in other words, you've got the walls, all the wet works are done, the windows are there, or let's say window frames are there, the roof material is there, maybe what you don't have are the ridges, and you don't have the window panes, the paint work is not done. They'll say, there is no building. Now, you run a risk when you've done that, because when you've spent the money, and you say the building does not exist on paper, you are lying. Oh, sorry, you are not telling the truth. Maybe here I can say, can use the words. You are not telling the truth, because relative to the outlay, there is a structure on the ground to show for the money. But it is not a complete structure. So it is a partially built building. Right? Now we can quibble about whether at that stage it represents 90% completion or whatever. Then you try to put a number. That's why we agonize over this with our audit committee members who are with us. But look, to present a little bit more information to comment, let's to slide 10, where we can reflect that of the partially completed things, which ones are only done if you put some estimates, 50 to 60%. Then we say 61 to 70. So you have a sense, it is not fully done, but if you were to put a percentage to the amount completed, what percentage? Partially complete exists in real life. I'm sorry, it exists in real life. Now, I do understand we can get to the end of the year, having said that we will produce a complete building, but have half of it. Yes, we have not achieved the full building, but we have achieved something, which is half a building. Because when we have spent money, at least we have got to show something for it. So that's what it means, honorable members. But I know we would have preferred 100%. Let me just get that right, so that I don't get misunderstood. When we have said we will produce a legislation, and then we would prefer that it must be done, signed by the president. Building, if it's a building, IT, if it's an IT, and so on. And my colleague is reminding me that the framework that sets out how we should report itself recognizes that sometimes things are partially done. So it's consistent with that. Yes, sir.
You're talking building.
Yes, yes.
You're talking targets that you yourself set. And you say you even commit to say at the end of this quarter, we will have achieved this target with this money. So that's what you're talking about. So if you go to building, it will take the discussion out. I want to focus on the target, whether you have been able to achieve your target or not. And if you have not achieved, I think it will give comfort to say partially. That's a no, not achieved. Achieved, but achieved. So that I'm talking targets, not building, targets in your strategy, you know, and in your annual performance plan. So this is what we want to hear about. Have you achieved?
I'm sure
all the members of that group. There are targets you put figures. You don't. Okay, fine. Now that's fine. Let me then take this, because we don't agree, but later on we will have to discuss to say why do we want to achieve. Because from where I'm sitting, you said 10, now the achievement to me is 10. Have you achieved, or have you not achieved the 10 that you committed yourself to? That's what I'm talking about. But then it does look like we don't agree with discussing them, so that as we move forward, we should see these things and move from the same wavelength. Thank you very much. You may proceed.
No, thank you, Honorable Sir. I'll come back to it at that stage. I don't want to appear to be upsetting you. But we'll come back to it. I'll explain myself. I'm not claiming, by the way, partial is equal to full. That one is unclear on. Okay. So then the issue about credit rating agencies, I think it may have come across
badly, it may have been heard incorrectly. We care about rating agencies. But perhaps the point, and it's interesting to share this with you, that communication can be a problem, because if we say, let us try and reduce the deficit because the rating agencies ask us to, it carries a particular taste, as opposed to saying, let us reduce the deficit because it makes sense for South Africa to do that. The fact that there is a coincidence of the interest, in other words, rating agencies like it when that happens, and therefore they rate us highly, is a good thing. But if you say to South Africa, tighten the belt because someone in New York or London says so, and they are busy enjoying nice burgers there, the people might just react badly to it. The first thing that one rating agency even said so, he said, no, we're getting worried now, they're going to make us hate that here, people are going to wait for us at the airport and take us from arrivals and put us to departures, because you're blaming everything that you have to do because you need it on us. So I'm glad that you seem to have an understanding. You see, the issue about net loan debt at what stage, there is literally the difference between what we, at the start of the year, we project. We think debt will be 44% given the numbers that are put in. But then at a particular point when you ask us, when we give you the actual amount, we've got to work out what is debt at that point, minus cash, divided by GDP, then we get a number. That's the difference. I hope I'm making sense. So it's projected to reach a particular point, but at the point at which we measured it here was more than the point that's projected. I misunderstood your question. Okay. Okay. I know that in India they shake heads and they agree. But we you know what it read in that slide where we talk about the things that cause underfunding. We make examples. And this is what happens when we make examples. By the way, it would have been better if we said such as. When you say such as, you can say such as even if something has not been the cause, but you can say sometimes it is one of them. But when you say it, you suggest it is one of them. It may not be weather, but this is a list of things that usually get given as reasons. Weather and unexpected discoveries, or come to be unexpected discoveries. A particular issue and stuff like that. Well, by the way, the country thing, there was doubt in part of South Africa, but there was really the other part. That's just so the reasons were given to us by the recipients of the grant, and we put them as they are. Unexpected discoveries, they sound saying, well, what happens sometimes is, if for instance you are going to build, you may think that I'm not saying this is special, but I'm giving it because we experienced this in our case. If you are going to build and you don't know that the area of soil structure is unstable, then you go, you think that you're going to build there, this and that, and when you then go and do the survey, you discover the thing. You didn't expect it, but you had to do. This is an example. Now, for instance, in our case, we would renovate a building, and people quoted being sure that the building needs one tree when they looked at it. But when they then started to do the work, they realized that structurally it needs more stuff than what they had estimated. Those are examples of unexpected discoveries. I hope I'm giving such a suggestion. So those are the kinds of stuff. So we list just examples there of things that had led to fall to understanding. As it's not bottom time, this is an example of where we think the relevant person within the department are optimistic about the speed with which the processes would run. And in this case, by the way, the problem lied with the supplier, that once everything had been said, the supplier just took long to deliver. Now, it's not very easy to punish them. Safepairs, if you write it in what you agree, that if you take an extra month to deliver, then we'll give you the amount billed minus 5%, which is something we may sometimes consider. But sometimes some people just say that, they say, okay, then I'm not interested, or something like that. So, but it doesn't mean that people just relax and stuff like that. And we can buy everything on month one, because the budget gets spread over the entire year. So we've got to spread the way we buy things over the period of the year as well. The partial staff, it was repeated again. Promise versus actual. I've got a lot of sympathy, Honorable Dr. Mazzotta, that indeed there might be connections between the fact that people may have been promised something and then it doesn't happen because the money has been stopped. There could be protests. But as I indicated earlier on, the choices we face are very stark. It's between saying the law is there, let's just agree it's a problem, let's go about our lives, or sometimes saying, look, the law matters, and try to find the right balance, as I indicated. We try to help as much as possible. We provide a full range of support as government. If I may leave the fact that this one relates province to municipalities. Provinces, we have run a program for over a decade now of providing technical support. You'll be amazed, sometimes they don't take the support. But similarly, even with municipalities, they started what then migrated to the DBSA and ultimately to DP, to DIHOP in MISA, the Municipal Infrastructure Support Agent, which is intended to provide all of the kinds of support. In fact, dare I say, this particular grant has got two components to it. It's got the one part that goes to bits and mortar, but it also has the part that people can apply for to use to buy technical expertise to the extent that they need it. Short of them, you know, saying to some of them, let's do it for yourselves, which may not work, because I only have 1,200 people in the department. And if you ask them to build your building, I wouldn't come to visit you at all. We will check before stopping. I wanted to use then as an example, Honorable Chair, the money, the IC, ICDG grant, it goes to Buffalo City, City of Cape Town, City of Johannesburg, Kwame, Ekurhuleni, Ekurhuleni, Mangaung, and Nelson Mandela Bay. The allocation has to speak. Let's take the example, for instance, of the municipality that gets the biggest allocations from this. It's the City of Johannesburg, 65 million in year one, 64 in year two, 67 in year three. That's the example. That's the biggest. The smallest one, Buffalo City, 6 million, 10 million, and 11 million. The idea with it is to encourage them to build more integrated spaces, cities, where the places where people live, work, are neatly located, and transportation systems well designed, and things like those. It's just to provide them, to have the planning capacity and stuff like that, to do that, to incentivize them to do the right thing, because when they get that right, it is our fervent belief that then people will spend less time on the road. They will spend less proportions of their income struggling between work and home and stuff like that. Now, of course, like all the grants, it's got conditions, and when the right things don't happen, the money doesn't go. I must say, I mean, I had met two municipalities as recently as yesterday, Johannesburg and Ekurhuleni. They have got really impressive plans. Partly because of this, but partly because the system is just maturing. I mean, when Johannesburg gives you its plans and demonstrates how they are imagining their built environment and why, it warms one's heart. I wish I could live 100 years and see what they have on paper now on the ground, but my time will come.
then the issue with the WBHO can be a sensitive thing. I have got sympathy for this thing that says those who have cheated one time probably not be given another chance lest they get tempted to cheat again. But however, the system works in this way. In this case, they had cheated on the construction of votes. It was clear, remember, sometimes it's easier. Now, the difficult part with that thing is that it was all the big companies. All the big companies. If you said, we blacklist all of you, you will never have business in South Africa. They shut down. And tomorrow, when you want to build something big, you don't have the capacity to build it. You know, there are those difficulties. But the process sometimes does allow that businesses must get blacklisted. They get, I don't know why it has got to be black, but that's how it usually gets said. I prefer that one also. Let's say that they've got to be prevented bad from doing business with government. It's a long sentence. Now, there is a process to follow. It can't be just done, for instance, by us. It must be instituted, as the rules prescribe, by the entity that was offended. And of course, President has got the final signing and putting them on a list. When they are not barred, if they are going to do work, as they did with SFSA in this case, you can't just say, I actually don't like that you were mentioned that time. Because they will take it to court. Simple, you lose. Because you have got no legal basis to say they can't do business. So I have got similar. But the issue of 25 years, you see what PPPs allow us, because this is a PPP. What PPPs allow us, Mother Boots, is that with the private sector money, the building is put up. Right? So upfront investment is incurred from their pocket. The construction risk that the building might fall, there might be delays and stuff, is their problem. In our case, CFSA in this case, they've got a contract. On that day, we want to move into the building. There will be terms. So there's that advantage. Then over time, over the 25-year period, there are unitary payments, which are just like the installment, and I will simplify it that way, for buying the building. So it's not as bad as it sometimes looks. In fact, I must not even say it's not as bad as it looks. There are merits to it. I'm not saying all PPPs are good, by the way, but it's got a fairly robust system of having them. The Department of Trade and Industry has got similar arrangement, but my professor here wants to add something.
I just want to, because that's exactly right. It's a repayment that occurs over a long period. It's not the full life of the building, but it's a substantial period of the life of the building. But the big advantage to government of these long-term concessions is that at the end of the concession period, the building comes back to the state, and there are penalties that kick in if it's not in a state, in a condition that is consistent with the contract. So you have a long-term concession at the end of which you get the building back, but there is an assurance detailed in a very detailed contract of what the state of the building has to be when it is handed back. Proper maintenance has to be done. And so a long-term concession brings with it considerable assurance that the fixed infrastructure will be properly maintained for the full period. And so when it's built, the contractor who's building it won't take shortcuts because they will pay for the shortcuts themselves in maintenance costs. So that's the economic logic of these agreements. But yes, it does lock us in for a long time.
Thank you very much, Professor. So it's the advantages. By the way, one of the things that I usually tell people, even when we disagree with some of them on the ethos, I say a lot of what we enjoy as roads in South Africa, maybe not a lot, but some of the good roads are built through similar arrangements. When you drive from Johannesburg to Durban, you really feel, you know, I've arrived. I'm proud to be South African, exactly because of that kind of arrangement. And I know it's just a different era, but long still. It's not very different. I mean, most people would have bonds to their houses for a very long time.
So it's not very different from that. It's better for a physical thing, by the way. I mean, what do I conscious am I saying now? A more valuable thing rather than a car that I can look at you one moment and say, what's a Maserati? And then the next moment I turn around the corner, it looks like crap. It's a nature of life. You can enjoy a better quality of life and things than your income allows you in the immediate term, in the belief that your income streams over time will cover the thing. That's the kind of that philosophy. So the getting close to the end, the overexpenditure on Program 6, Honorable McLaughlin, it relates to two things. It is the exchange rate, one, but two, it is also the acquisition of shares that we didn't anticipate, to get from the African Development Bank. We will, of course, have to make savings from within our budget to cover that. Now, there was the issue which belongs to partial staff where we say not applicable. What that means is that if the target is for a year, but in the instance of a quarter, there was no expectation that something must be delivered by the end of the first quarter. So there is no reporting on it. Let me, for instance, we say we have a roadshow, as an example, but we normally do it close to the end of the financial year. In the first quarter, we will say it is not applicable for that reporting period because there is no other roadshow. That's where I can agree with honorable members. You either have it or you don't have it. How many positions filled? No, I wouldn't want to. We can give you the number. I do. Yeah, the vacancy rate was about 8.6% out of 1,214. So you can work it out. Yeah. Yeah, that's where it is. It's not a big number of people. Since that we had it, when I don't post about vacancies. Now that the compensation of employees' ceiling has been lowered, at least we don't have a huge challenge. We just, stop the ceiling of both, or feel selectively, let me put it more precisely. Now, that brings us to the end of the jobs fund, yes.
I can quickly deal with the five questions on the jobs fund. Let me clarify the way this works. The JOS fund operates on the basis of a call for proposals which is issued. Project applicants put in applications. Those applications are then assessed in the first round, and there's a selection made of projects that look promising and that meet the criteria that have been set, which are specified in the request for proposals. So we cut down from maybe 100 applications to 30 or 40 at that stage. Applicants are then invited to submit a detailed business case. That's quite a costly thing to prepare. It needs quite a lot of detail. And an investment committee then assesses a full business case, and decisions are made, and contracts are entered into with job fund partners. So when the table refers to grant commitments, the 5 or 6 billion matched by another 6 or 7 billion by the project sponsor, the total of 11 billion that you referred to, sir. That's what's contracted, and implementation then begins. The next reported spending item of 3.3 billion in disbursements is the disbursements out of the state's contribution, just out of the 5.6 billion that the state contributes. That would also be matched by the own contributions of project sponsors. So the disbursements of 3 billion represents the state's contribution to spending on those projects of probably 6 or 7 billion by the deadline that we're reporting on now. So that's how those numbers play out. On wages, we have a national minimum wage, but of course in many sectors there are either bargaining council agreements or statutory wage levels that are set by the Department of Labour. And one of the important things that is assessed in course of evaluating projects is whether they are compliant with the relevant legislation. And I can't give you a confident answer on whether these wages that are reported are full costs to company or net wages. The that does rely on information that's coming back from implement partners, but my guess is this is pretty much full wages. These would be startup jobs, so they're starting off at low levels within these industries. The 1.7 billion in support of enterprise development covers a wide range of things. There are 40-odd enterprise development projects. Some of these are partnerships with financial institutions that are providing loans or funding to small enterprises. So this is a guarantee type facility or a co-funding of lending to businesses. In other cases, we're contributing to mentorship and training programs for businesses. In some cases, we're contributing to the cost of infrastructure of projects. Just to give an example of the diversity, there's quite a bit of diversity here, but there's an interesting enterprise development program that focuses on putting in place digital communication infrastructure in township informal businesses to enable them to take advantage of wider logistics and supply opportunities, the kind of partnership in which we share the costs of investment. So support for enterprises here mean a variety of things. On the geographic spread, in the end, we do just have to say this is a program that operates on the basis of submissions, and so we do not have a grand plan sort of parachuting in balanced amounts of money for provinces. We do try to track provincial spread. We do take that into account in assessments, but we are reliant on the application to come in.
Allow the honourable members to make follow-up questions, and if you don't have follow-up questions, you can then proceed with a second round of new questions. Honourable member Shope Sitole, honourable member Fee, honourable member Lowe, and then honourable member Baba.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My first question, I didn't ask any question before. It's on the jobs fund. I see the process is such that business proposals are very expensive to make. So does it mean that poor rural youth was not taken into account when we think of the jobs fund? Or should I put it in a more positive way, say, how do we get the rural youth to participate? Because they are there, but they don't know how to, they hear about it, but they don't know how to be part of this. That is one. Two, I just comment, you know, on a partially completed and 100%. You know, in my previous life as an accountant, I am familiar with it. There will always be work in progress. And also as a member of a committee in Parliament, let's say this committee, I remember went into some nice hotel somewhere in the Cape, and we sat there for a whole week, and we planned, we set out our target that we're going to achieve 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 by this. But you know, when 1, 2, 3 we were told that there are elections, we have to close and go. So we ourselves, our report will have partially completed and completed. So it's normal in business as far as I understand. So the other one is the comfort you gave me, DG, when you said we can trust the post office, because I do have a few, I don't have a lot of money, but a few runs in the post office. But I was scared to death this morning. I have a habit of waking up maybe at 12 o'clock and go into the internet. And I came across a very scary video when this guy said, wake up Americans, wake up, there is dollar war, China is introducing the unit, that is the dollar with Paul, they are talking with Putin, and now these BRICS people, five countries, named them and included South Africa, and these people are waging war against the dollar, so a dollar will be nothing. Then he went on to say, I'm giving you advice, if you are in the city, tomorrow, you must go into the country and look for a space and make yourself a building, because there will be chaos, there will be trouble in the cities. So I was very scared when I came here. I immediately, you know, emailed this thing to my friends here, those who actually take my posting seriously. I think you did read. I think she read. So it was quite scary for me. So I thought maybe even the post office for another category. But I'm happy. But the other one is the remark when in your absence, when your trusted cadre was no, I'm correct. We can go to the dictionary. It's a cadre of the department. Yeah, we can deal with that afterwards. No, they are not politicians. They are not. When your trusted cadre gave input, I listened to him there. I usually listen very, very carefully when people talk. He said he listens to the credit raisers, but he is government. And I think that's a very correct stance. We need that stance. Because I'll tell you why. There's a guy called Fabian Lindner. He writes how rating agencies are aggravating the euro crisis. The other one is the University of Minnesota Law School. They write, why did the rating agencies do such a bad job when rating subprime securities? The last one is the most cited economist of our time, Professor Joseph Stiglitz of the Columbia University. He says, I view the rating agencies as one of the key culprits. Thank you.
Your input, we have Honorable Tafik.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Just a follow-up message and comments regarding the, I understand what the DG is saying about the, everything is done and there's a whole lot of paperwork and letters with regards to the withholding of funds, but there is a responsibility in terms of the law as well on Treasury to assist provinces as well as municipalities to ensure that they comply. So there is a law. So I'm not gonna lose on this one. I think it's important that we need to if there's a problem, then we need to educate the municipalities on how. We can't just take the money back. And I understand that you know there's law, but there's, you know, we must look at both sides of the coin and make sure that we don't just write the letters hoping that they're going to achieve and comply and then grab the money. It's just that we just need to make sure that we avoid that. Honourable Chair, the issue about this, the partially achieved and the achieved, I don't want to spend too much time because I don't think we're going to get a winner today, but you know, if it's, I'm with you on this one, Honourable Chair, but if it's a target, if you're supposed to build one house, if you're supposed to, and the DJ alluded to this, if you're supposed to have one roadshow, then either you have the roadshow, you've got the house, or you have it. And so, but nevertheless, I hear what Honourable Shop is totally saying, but I think with this one, it's not going to work, because you've got your targets and you have to achieve those targets. So I'm sorry, I'm not going to fall for that one. The issue mentioned by the Honourable DG, I mean the DG with regards to the drought, of course, yes, there were areas where we had a lot of rain. But you know, last year we were in Mount Ayliff, and there were two contractors that couldn't work. There were two. One contractor couldn't work because of the inclement weather in the same town. So, you know, one needs to be very careful of these reasons for not performing. Same town,
probably less than a kilometer apart. The one contractor couldn't work and the other contractor worked. How do you explain that? So all I'm saying is that we get these reasons or these excuses why the work cannot be done, but whether that is a valid reason is questionable. Then, Honourable Chair, the last point, and this one again, sorry, DJ, I'm not agreeing with you on another one. This internal audit and risk management, where you mentioned the it wasn't relevant in the first quarter. Now, I can't agree with that one and the number of provincial visits undertaken to improve intergovernmental relations and provincial financial performance. Now, surely your performance is for the coming year. So you can't meet at the end of the financial year to plan a improvement in financial performance for the forthcoming year. You're not doing all that. You're looking at your performance that needs to be improved. So therefore, you have to have it even before the first quarter. So I believe that that's one, that is problematic. And the same with your internal audit. I mean, internal audit and risk management must be done before the year. You can't do your risk management and prepare a risk matrix or a risk register at the end of the financial year. So those are ones that surely, maybe in other instances, but I think that those two, they have to be done before the start of the financial year. Thank you, Chair.
I was just struggling. My follow-up one, Chair, is on the job fund one because I haven't asked previous on it. There's a one that is stating on page 2 that on your permanent job that you have created. On that figure, the 121,481 that were permanent jobs were created. Is that in all provinces? And then how does it relate to the other two numbers that you have given at the bottom? Sorry, that is answered. That is off the... that is answered. But what I want to also find out is that, yet again, maybe even perhaps if you don't have it now, just how much women in terms of be the percentage is the actual number. So I'm saying 65% women, but how much is it of that whole figure? And then how much is actually white, black, and colored Indian in that regard? If you don't have it now, if you can just furnish the office of the research office with it. And then the one of the technical skills and work readiness program, do you actually follow up on that number of trainees that you have trained? Are they in the system and so forth, or where are they? Do you just train them and then they have the skills and we don't follow up on them in terms of job placements and so forth? And then yet again on the completing learnership one of page 3, the exact question, are you following up on the 15,000, where are they in the system, were they absorbed by private sector, were they absorbed by government departments, so that you don't have just trained this internship and then they sit at home by the end of the day. Thank you, Chair. Oh, and the last one, sorry, Chair. Sorry, Chair.
Okay.
The one on the National Treasury one, on slide 21, on the procurement, I don't know if the DC have answered, I was just getting from the minutes, but the procurement and staff capacity constraints in selected municipalities, which municipalities are that? And in which areas, if we can just get a list of those municipalities that don't have procurement and staff capacity. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable John Wayne. We now call upon Honourable Babasa.
Yeah, Chairperson, most questions have been asked by the members, so I will be short. Except to say on the issue of municipalities that are non-compliant and therefore forcing you to hold money, I do want to say that we do get worried when such things happen. At one level, we want municipalities to comply with the prescript of the law as far as compliance is concerned. At another level, we are worried about delivery of services. And such a very tricky balancing act. So we would want to understand whether once you have come to a stage where you withhold the money, you then go on to assist these municipalities with capacity building, of course, probably jointly with COCTA as well, so that in future they don't continue to fail to comply and therefore suffer consequences. The second question relates to the jobs fund. We are worried that very little is being said about persons with disability benefiting from this fund. And therefore, if you could look into that, or perhaps if you have, just leave us, add them into the details so that we understand you are taking care of that as well. Also, not much is said about cooperatives, which are part of the new SMME cooperative sector that needs to grow together. Unless, of course, and I don't want to read it much into that, unless, of course, some of the NGOs would register themselves as such, as cooperatives, I don't know. But linked to the NGOs and the public sector organization as well, one would like to know whether you do have a way of determining the actual existence of these NGOs and whether they are doing exactly what they are doing. When they present their business proposals, so that you don't just give money in the hope that they are creating jobs and they are giving specific service to communities when in fact they are doing other things. And I raise this question because the National Notaries Board will tell you stories about this, including very bad stories about the work some of these NGOs are doing in the country. So, but linked to that, these public sector organizations, we would like to understand what are these public sector organizations that are benefiting from the jobs fund. Maybe one has a limited understanding of the public sector, simply many employees of government. So that's part of the limitation, but perhaps this could explain it. 12,000 SMEs, very commendable, but do you have a way of determining just how many jobs they are creating? And also their sustainability. Because it's important to have them creating these much needed jobs, but also doing businesses that are sustainable over time so that at a particular point they become self-sufficient and contribute better to the economy. And linked to that, of course, is the issue that we very often don't look into, all of us. And that is the the percentage they contribute to the GDP, so that we see that whether there is progress in that regard. The partially achieved, Jefferson, my understanding of partially achieved would be that some work has been done with part of the budget funds, and because the target was declared and the budget attached to the target, or attached to the target, you need to declare the extent to which you have achieved and the funds already committed and the funds remaining to complete the target. And therefore, I don't think that we should all the time say, tell us whether we've completed or we've not completed. So in some instances, you can report on progress done or progress made, which is correct, because you're talking about public funds. You're also talking about expected outcomes. This committee is popular for always declaring that it follows money and targets and outcomes. And so for me, that would be my understanding of the partially achieved. And so I don't think that we should quibble about that. Except to say that if we are looking for particular specifics in partially achieved, then we must say so. And that would be a correct expectation on our part as a committee. The last issue, I just thought, you know, this slight skin, this 42.4% target of the net loan debt to GDP, which escalated 44.3% at the fourth quarter, end of the fourth quarter. Does this represent this percent increased expenditure of public expenditure, or are there other extraordinary circumstances that would have forced this growth of this percentage to GDP? Could have been the exchange rate volatility, could have been the doubt, the demands that are made upon the public funds by the draft. It could have been additional other things. Because when we talk about this thing, it's as if that this loan debt is increasing because of government recklessness. And in fact, it's in most cases not the case. Because if you look at the next slide on the other page on the same subject, on the first quarter, you realize that this debt to GDP has evened out. And it then indicates that we are achieving the target, and there is a possibility of reducing that gradual further if our economic environment faces a positive territory. So if you could explain that, thank you.
Okay, those are the new questions. I'll take it the last questions to the department. Dr. Madobe.
Thanks for responding. Chair, I did not hear the impact since this program was launched of in city generation in 2004, as it was launched, whether it's making any impact. That's what I did not get very well. And also on the issue of the partial, I think, colleagues, the way we used to say in the committee, we always say we follow the money. It means to say to us, even they have not completed the project, because we are not interested only on the completed project. We are also interested in the progress. That's why even call them within the first quarter. Because if we were not interested in the progress, we would have called them on the fourth quarter and say, what has been completed? So I think if we attach the budget, we attach the money on the activity or on the project, we must know, because they can't come here and say, we have spent 50%. They say we haven't spent anything. They don't indicate, and we don't know where the money that we have appropriated to each and every department. Maybe we need to understand, because we appropriate money, we follow it. If it is in the 50%, we know that now the money we are following is at the 50%. And then if it is 100%, we know that it's completed. Because if we don't follow the money, it will mean to say that if they report to say we haven't done, we won't know the progress and follow up and do the oversight on what they've done and give them if they are slow on their progress going forward. Yes.
Also, if I may be allowed to make a comment, see, as we do our oversight, we have to look at the work before us holistically. The other angle is, if you don't achieve your targets in the first quarter, the interpretation is that there will be an underexpenditure. And that might have an impact as you proceed to the next quarter. And probably also an impact at the end of the financial year, because there might be money that is underspent. And we all know that in terms of the PFA, understanding is, please teach me DG. Understanding is, it's an offense. No, but thank you, Ben. That was a comment from me. I have a question to ask the DG. DG, with regards to Program 5, we spent 361.9 million. That was spent by 191%, largely due to the Integrated Financial Management Systems project. How are you going to avoid unauthorized expenditure and over expenditure at the end of the financial year? Now, also given that this very critical project has been ongoing since 2005, how far are we from completion and what still needs to be done? We'd like to get a progress report in this regard. Now, on the internal audit, I would like the internal auditor to kindly share the status of internal controls within the department, and are these adequate to ensure that the department attains its objectives. And then, on the audit committee chair, or the gentleman who's representing the chair, what are those aspects of risk management and governance that are functioning effectively? And just as importantly, also those aspects of risk management and governance that require attention and may need to be improved and looked at. With regard to the job fund, noting that the South African ICT companies rank among world leaders in areas such as mobile software, electronic banking services, revenue management, and others, how can we get more job funding projects in the ICT area? The last one is, some of the major projects National Treasury is involved in, which are critical for improving our public finances, such as one, completing expenditure reviews and review of accommodation leases. Two, ordering remuneration trends together with GPSA, which is key to managing our wage bill. Three, I'm talking about the projects that you're involved in. Identifying cost containment efforts and strengthening enforcement mechanisms across departments and public entities. Last one, publication of fiscal risk reports. Kindly provide feedback and progress on these critical projects. DG, and you said Honorable DG. DG, we now hand over to you for response. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Sir. What we will do perhaps, let me just say, there is progress on the projects that you have asked about that are very important to our work. What I would suggest with your permission is that we probably give you just a page on each one of them. For instance, the extended services between ourselves and the DPMA, we have done them. I mean, we were going to publish some of them. I can't remember now the months that we had targeted. But we completed a number of them, and it's a kind of ongoing work. We do the reviews, and then they show us things. We use them for purposes of even allocating resources and so on and so forth. Indeed, we intend publishing the fiscal risk, but I just sort of register, or call it that. I don't know at what stage it is, but we can indicate to the committee. As I'm saying, on the last part of your questions, we would sort of give, say, have a page or page on each one of them. For instance, cost containment measures, they are well underway. Well underway with numbers, but we may not perhaps, I don't know how we'll do this, because some of it is stuff that maybe Minister might want sort of announced at the time of the MTV bears or in the speech, but we can make an arrangement to signal to say areas, for instance, things like travel and accommodations and areas of targeted. We did the textbook one the previous year. The stuff on, for instance, just the contracts for software, as an example. I mean, I can, the list is longer than my arm, but because now, because I didn't quite anticipate it, I don't remember all of them from the top of my head. So it's a very good question, because there was that big commitment with a number to it that the minister made. Just back to the rest of the questions. I thought I should start with yours, because it was the first time you asked, and so that I can get more protection from the honorable person. I've realized it doesn't help. I must say, I mean, let me say to Dr. Fick, Honorable Dr. Fick, I don't want to appear to be deciding with him when I agree. Let me be clear on this thing of helping municipalities. Stopping or withholding is the last thing we do. We do everything we can think about, within our capacity, of course, before we ultimately resort to stopping. So, few honorable members have raised this. But the point I emphasize, and this may be just the school teacher in me, one thing you don't do is to write a rule and never ever invoke it. Because people learn that, oh, they can question, they can do all the other things, but the one thing they never do is to stop the money. Right? And in these repeated games, then once the word goes out, that they never stop the money because they are afraid that service delivery will be lost or they will be blamed for non-delivery, then people just do it. They don't care. They will say, okay, let's sit it out. When it gets close to the end of the financial year, they transfer. So, and it may be, honorable member, something that you should, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but consider strongly then when the Division of Revenue Bill is before you. But I dare say the Division of Revenue Bill is aligned to the Constitution. Because the Constitution too does say that when there is a persistent breach, da-da-da-da-da, you stop, even the equitable fair. And most people thought that it never happened until it did. I wouldn't say with regional disparity, because it was not admitting annual financial statements. It is a difficult thing to do, because you know that some of them, they depend almost absolutely on this equitable fair. But when people ignore rules, I almost said I would never serve a system, perhaps I should say, where rules are just a piece of paper. I wouldn't. When you have the rules, they must apply. Of course, you don't apply them heartlessly, you know, you just wake up one day, you say, let's stop the money. you know, you do the other things, but when everything has been done, and the only thing that's left in the rules that are written is to stop. Please allow us to stop. Please allow us to stop. Of course, keep pushing us that we must help first and ask us for the help. But it must, people must never get the idea that it looks like the stopping is going to stop. Because if people get that impression, then the world will be a better, a terrible place for us. Thanks for inducing me on this. Then the partially achieved, fully achieved, I will avoid it. I agree with the Honorable Member who have spoken on it. I will just say that and say no more. My professor deals with George Floyd very well. Honorable Mabaza is very correct. In fact, I probably got my facts twisted here. It is the exchange rate, it is the interest rate, as you recall, in the period of the reporting, the exchange rate had depreciated in part. And therefore, it's not even that we have borrowed more. That's just that component, in part, is part of the component of the borrowing that's denominated in dollars, just expands the moment the exchange rate depreciates by a material amount. Of course, interest rate and yields have gone up a little bit in the period. And as you say, there are a couple of moving variables there. When GDP does not grow fast, then the ratio gets tilted in a direction of an increase in the net debt to GDP, but it's not as a factor of any decision that has been taken. Anything. So your explanation is actually a good one, and it is the correct one. The ICDG, I think it's called, that grant. As I was saying, in the bigger scheme of things, perhaps is the right way to say it. It's a very small grant. If you take Johannesburg, I think Johannesburg's budget now is between 55 and 60 billion a year. My colleague, this is roughly that amount. Now, this bill that we give is too small. But it is meant to influence how they manage the big grant. And as I was hinting, the plans are already beginning to show that the incentive works. And I wouldn't want to sit here with a clean conscience and say, all of it is due to this grant, by the way. I wouldn't say that. I mean, we saw Soweto turn into a beautiful place that it has become long before this grant was there. But I would say that it is something that we had the conversation with them, in part because we have this grant, and they were showing us their plans at Johannesburg and Durban. Not because I live in Gauteng, but I found the Johannesburg one even more impressive. Both of them are good plans. And we have had an instance where all the cities that are benefiting from this grant came with a conference with investors showcasing these plans. They have very beautiful plans, in my view. That's why I'm praying to God that I live very long, so that I can see the cities that now exist on paper, existing on the ground, because it's one thing. It really begins to change lives when it happens on the ground, but it starts with the paper. So that's where we are.
A good plan long before the 2016 local government election and beautiful as Johannesburg.
You see, the only challenge here is that I have not recognized you, Honorable Mbam, and try and, you know. I know you want to respond. Please, may I ask that you don't respond. And also, let's not provoke each other, so that we remain focused. You mustn't lose focus, and let's remain focused. Thank you very much.
The last one from me, Honorable Sir, before I can allow my two high capable, probably mostly qualified than all of us, women colleagues, these kind of accountants, to respond to the answer. Let me just start.
maybe I should leave aside the IMF questions on IMF so that people don't think that we just put you here because we got you. We might be asked about the gentleman.
And very honourable members, the question that has been asked in terms of the 172 million overspend on the IFMS, as explained earlier when we were doing the presentation, first of all, it was a matter beyond our control in terms of that's what the service provider wanted. And as my colleague from the Attorney General will explain the process as to that led to that, we had to weigh a few options, and there came a time where actually even the lifting of the tender period was about to expire. Hence, obviously, because we needed to make sure that, you know, we cross all the T's and all the I's in the process. And as a result, we had paid. In order to avoid the overspending, you would see that this is the department. We're not necessarily overspending. It's just that this was a quota that has already passed the quota one. So subsequent to that, we are talking to public finance as well. We have made sense of getting the funds transferred. And as a result, we've asked the program itself to utilize all other avenues before obviously we can fully exhaust and go outside the program to get additional funds. And the subsequent payment, obviously the last one has just been paid now. So as much as at the time when the year started, it was not budgeted for. That's because the expectation was that we would pay it over the period. But when you look at the cost benefit of it, it would not have made sense to pay it over the period and incur probably over 500 million extra as opposed to paying it now and a request for additional funds from the public tenant. So, yeah, in terms of the details of the process and where we are with the project, I'll hand over to the Accountant General's Office to respond to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Minister, for trying the button. I can't use the building analogy for this IT project because it really shouldn't take this long to have this project conceptualized and implemented. So we are conscious in the Accountant General's Office and in the National Treasury that this is a strategic project and that it has fallen behind, and we are putting up every effort in order to ensure that we do meet our targets and the expectations of the public service in this regard. So in the end of 2013, we went to Cabinet with a memorandum detailing where we are, proposals on how we would be able to catch up on time and still, you know, achieve the original objectives of this program. So we detailed how we would achieve this, and in doing so, we indicated that we wouldn't be exceeding the estimates that had previously been taken to Cabinet in that regard. And that was completion by 2021. So at this point in time, we are still pushing hard to reach that end date of 2021 and putting strategies in place in order for us to leverage all our partners, such as CETA, in order to do that and engaging with the market also. I guess one of the hard lessons we've learned when you give accountants an IT project is accountants are often dreaming about future and new requirements and changing legislation. So what we have learned is obviously as our environment matures, there's new legislation that comes in. IT, the requirements are always responding to that. So as much as we will want to have a solution implemented and available to the public service by 2021, we've realized that this is going to be an ongoing initiative for quite a number of years to ensure that we are able to support our policymakers and decision makers with information that is relevant at that point in time. So that is our targeted end date. But we do acknowledge that, you know, environments change and continuously would have to be a focus for the Accountant General's Office to ensure that we are in line with expectations on an annual basis. Thank you.
Thank you. And it's just a question on JobSmart and then the representative of our audit committee.
Maybe before we leave this one in particular, you see the issue here is violation of your own law. And I know that it is expected that National Treasury must lead by example all the time, so that you continue to have the influence over all of us with regards to performance, credit balance with compliance. So I hear you saying that there was pressure from the service provider. Does it mean that if you've got, I'll give you a practical example. You see, if I can go to China now and try and put pressure, they won't change. They will never change. But here at home, see, this is relaxation. And particularly as it comes from the, I would say your office, because remember you are the accountable, you are the accountant officer. To me, that's a precedent. Let's hope it will not happen again, because it is wrong to try and please somebody that you choose this above compliance. Now, with the law, I'll tell you, I joined the public sector in 1981. I'm telling you, I've been saying, you don't break the law. And hope people will understand. You don't bend the rules and hope people will understand. You follow procedure to the latter. Because once you break the law, you set a precedent. Then you set a problem. I'm just saying as we move forward, but to me it is an over-expenditure. It cannot be described otherwise. And we know over-expenditure is not allowed in terms of budgetary principles. Under-expenditure is not allowed in terms of budgetary principles. And also, you are expected to do the same. It's an observation, and also we would like to really condemn it.
What you're saying is spot on, but perhaps let's just clarify on something. The Treasury has been given a budget for 2016-17. The financial year hasn't ended. Right? We still have, it is within the rules, and this is what we're doing. What we are going to do is to slow down or stop some things so that we release the resources to cover this, so that by the end of this financial year, Treasury will not have broken the law. Treasury will not have exceeded its budget. But in the interest of, this is the problem with it, we could have chosen to prematurely, because we have not done it to the full extent yet. We could have chosen to make adjustments here so that the thing looks like it doesn't exist. But the year end, the 31st of March is very far. When we get there, then the jury can judge us and say, you have broken the law. But before that, it is within us. That's the first point. And the second point, I worry because of the explanation, the way people put it, it's like we're just subjected to pressure. If you were to look at the people and look at me, you would realize that it's not easy for them to put me under pressure. I know. I'm saying, you see, they put it better. Rather than pressurizing us, they enticed us to a better deal. And this is how it looks. As the CFO was saying, you have an offering to buy the thing over a longer period of time and end up paying 500 million more, or you buy it quicker over a shorter period of time and you get the benefit of paying less on it. It was a very difficult decision. We decided and agonized over it. We said, look, the choice here is let's take a plunge and endure the pain within the rules. We will, for instance, the rules allow us that we should, within reason, within what the rules prescribe, we can move money between programs, but the environment exists for that purpose. We hope that we will be able to do it fully within the rules while taking advantage that was offered, not pressure. I don't get pressure easily. But thanks to your voice, relative to how we have put it, we're valid. And you are cautioning that we'll make sure that we get to the end of the year, and I hope that I will not pick my hat when I get to the end of the year.
Very quickly on the jobs fund issue, so one of the questions raised was about checking on NGOs. Do they really exist? Do they do what they say they're doing? And the answer is we put quite a lot of effort into vetting organizations. We do site visits, we look through the books, we insist on audit statements, we do cost checks in order to ensure not just NGOs, but the businesses we deal with, in fact businesses especially, and when I say businesses especially, in a project like this, there is always the difficulty of trying to work out whether it's appropriate to financially support one particular business or group of businesses rather than others. And so we have to be very careful about ensuring that we have partnerships with businesses that make sense from a public finance point of view. The question was asked about what about the rural youth poor, who can they apply to the fund? The answer is no. You can't apply to the fund as a complete new startup with no record and no assets and no capacity to deliver that's been established and proven. The fund doesn't exist to fund startups directly. We look for intermediaries to work with who themselves will work with smaller organizations. And so some of the best jobs fund projects are with organizations that have the capacity themselves to work with smaller organizations. And there's just a straightforward practical administrative reason for that. The Jobs Fund can't itself take on the job of dealing with all the potential applicants that would come to it. It has to look for partners who themselves engage with smaller organizations. And they might be cooperatives, they might be small enterprises, they might be community organizations. But we look for partners that can bring both a track record and the financial contribution to projects. The question was asked about what are the public sector organizations we work with. There are a number of municipalities that have put in applications and have received funding for projects from the Jobs Fund. The South African National Parks has quite a big project for employment creation and training of people. There are some provincial departments that have projects with the Jobs Fund. There are one or two science councils that are putting applications. So there are quite a wide range of public sector or government agencies or departments that have taken advantage of the Jobs Fund. On persons with disabilities, that's a good point. And in our more detailed tracking, there would be information on that. There are one or two projects that are specifically about work opportunities for people with disabilities. And then on the general question of tracking people through learnerships, do we really have a way of measuring impact? The Jobs Fund, partly because, as I said earlier, is about learning. It's about innovation. It's about trying to understand what works and what doesn't. So a lot of emphasis on insisting on our project partners themselves, monitoring, evaluating what they do, and on making information available for the evaluations that we do ourselves. And that doesn't mean you can track everybody. So in a program that has trained 1,000 learners, you're not going to succeed in backing everybody into the experience in the job market. But we certainly are putting work into assessing and evaluating impact in a systematic way. And lastly, on the ITT is a good point, a good question. Chair, the latest round that is currently being assessed, not yet contracted, is an innovation round, and there have been a number of applications that have come in for consideration that are about taking advantage of ICT networks and new technology in contributing not so much to direct job creation, but often to making it easier for businesses to link up with markets. Making it easier for rural operations to link up with logistics and supply chain.
Mr. Mano, or is it one of the two of you or both? Oh, okay.
They say you had wanted that we must give a view on the control environment of the department across in terms of the audits that we perform within the Treasury. I mean, the Treasury as an institution is an environment where the control environment fairly works. There's a lot of positives that one can draw from the reviews that we do. On average, from an internal audit point of view, we do anything between 55 and 60 audit assignments that cut across the various divisions within the institution. And what we do find is that a lot of things work as opposed to a lot of things not working. And even in areas where we find that there is room for improvements in terms of findings that we have outlined, it is taken very seriously. To extend that the Director General makes issues around findings a discussion point in the executive committee meetings of the organization. So there is a lot that works, and if we are to provide an opinion as to whether the control environment is sufficient and adequate, is, and that is why the institution in many instances is able to achieve its objectives. So we, from an internal point of view, are quite satisfied with the control environment and the opinion thereof. Thanks.
Go ahead. This is you. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. The question that we were asked to comment on was basically on certain aspects of risk management and document versus whether they are functioning effectively from the committee perspective, and which areas we perceive as requiring some improvement. And I think, as our Chief Executive has commented, from maybe let's start with the audit environment. I think as audit committee we are very satisfied and actually very proud with our internal audit function and its ability to provide us with assurance required to ensure that the control environment within internal and within national treasury is functioning effectively. And so there's hardly any area that we can say requires improvement. But if you just mention a few of the areas that really they have assisted us in, is that they actually enjoy a lot of support from management and the senior executive, and there's a lot of close working relationship with them, which ensures us that there is they take our audit very seriously, and therefore its output is able to be that that the one which is very reliable, and the audit committee we feel very comfortable that we are then providing complete oversight, and if there's any issues that require our attention, they are brought to us speedily and be able to take necessary action. Also, we are very comfortable that, I mean, they are services objective, and that's what we always look at very closely, to make sure that they remain independent to some degree, in order for us as the oversight structure to place reliance on their work, and that we are very comfortable with. Also, what we've noted with our internet banking is that they definitely have conformed to literally the high standards of internal audit profession, and as a result there is due reliance even from the likes of AGFA, the Auditor General's Office, and there's a lot of close working between the two of them, and that really just gives witness to the fact that they really are doing a good job as far as we're concerned as audit committee. In terms of the areas of improvement, I mean, all we can say is that it's just to maintain that standard, because to make sure that they don't regress, there's a lot of quality work that needs to be constantly under monitoring and really pushing the bar to make sure that as the environment changes, they remain relevant, they remain on the ball in terms of them keeping up with the challenging time that we face, and that is what actually they need to just continue tapping on. I think as far as risk management, and I'm speaking of the audit committee, also happening to chair the risk management committee. When it comes to the risk management function of the National Treasury, I can say there's been a recognition that there is some attention that requires to be paid on the risk management function. Our assessment is that it has worked very well, let me say, over the past decade, give or take, and what we have noted is that there is some level of complacency, let's put it that way, that then has caused management to awaken, to bring some interventions over the risk management function. But I think what that is due to is because of how the treasury environment is well controlled, it gives them the comfort. So there could be areas where, because of how controlled it is, one tends to give it less attention, and I think that's what has happened over the risk management function. But I think the management interventions that have come into gear, that there is an awakening to say, let's revisit how our risk management function delivers, and as we speak, there is a complete, let's say, overhaul, a lot of considerations that we put on the table to actually refocus the risk management function, to get top management fully involved, to actually give more attention to the various entities that National Treasury oversees, so that sufficient attention is given to each of the entities even. So as maybe to sum up, I would say on the internal side, we're very comfortable as audit committee. We think it's delivering as expected, and we're comfortable with its product. And on the risk management, there is a reason to be concerned, but we can't tell it because as we speak, we get our hands dirty and we reshuffling how those operations have been, and there should be good progress able to report, I'm sure, next time as well. Thank you.
I take it that we've received the two remaining responses. I wish I was here, but you know. It's okay.
What else do
you are there follow-up questions? None. Especially on the internal auditor and the chairperson of the audit committee. We are happy. No follow-ups, eh? Yes, Honorable Tafik.
Yeah, maybe just for the record, what is the composition and qualifications of the audit committee?
Is it like to their quality inputs?
Thank you, Chair, for that. We are six members, maybe some of just the numbers, and we have our chair of them is a chartered accountant, myself also a chartered accountant. I think the county is about two, if not three chartered accountants, but like an IT specialist, almost like a professor kind of a caliber, to make sure that we overlook our IT, oversee our IT enablement within the national trade space. So I'll say the composition is one that is diverse, is one that ensures that we are able to oversee the diverse operations of the national treasury, but it is a huge portfolio, and what we pride ourselves in is the ability to keep a close relationship with the senior management structure. We are able to, on demand, if need be, call upon management in the GM2 that is to be able to pay particular attention to areas that we think are concerned. Even the chair, I mean, I think they touched on the IFMS. We have paid attention to the concerns that have been shared in here. We've highlighted them, and we're zooming in on areas that are concerned. That's the assistance program of our IT capability. But it is diverse, and it is fully capable, and we've tried to really kind of do the best possible.
Okay.
Sorry, Honorable Chairperson. And the chairperson is a woman. She's a black African woman. The chairperson of the board, not you. The committee, sorry.
We expect you to meet that requirement. Now, the question was qualification. Obviously, Baba, you'll be general. So may we request that we be provided, because just that we are diverse, if it was an exam, I was going to fail you. Qualification. But that's fine. I'm sure we'll be able to be provided with that information in writing. It's right. Let's not... I see you've got your hand up.
Maybe be specific.
I don't doubt specific.
Our chairperson, as I said, is a chartered accountant with honors. And then the other member, we got masters in business administration, that's Mr. Amin Amot. The person I referred to, our chairperson, is Ms. Octavia Magoa, the CA with honors. Amin Amot, masters in business administration. And also is a certified internal auditor. He's got he's also certified in government auditing and professional audit certification. He also has got risk management assurance qualification. Myself, Leander, I'm a chartered accountant, I have a master's in business leadership as well. Our other member, Ms. Anna Boudin, she is an IT specialist. She's got a master's in business administration, master's in applied science and electrical engineering. She's got BSc computer science, and she's done prominent diploma, and I think the list is very long for her. And our, yeah, and there's a new member who just joined us. He's the only one who actually has an economist who just joined us, I think, recently due to the expiry of the term of one of our members. But that member is an economist. So those are the specific details in terms of the qualifications of our members.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Member Schopenstolle.
Make a humble plea that I would like to see the latest report of the audit committee, if we can just see a copy. But the committee itself
the composition is very impressive. And I really listen to the internal audit reporting. It gives me some comfort. But I my person would like to see something in black and white so that I can fortify my confidence.
Well, Gigi, I'm sure you can see how serious we take our work. Before we close, I really would like to respond on one issue that you raised, that of stopping the stocking. Gigi, you see, government is about service delivery and value for money, and also about balancing, remember, between performance and compliance. Now, the issue here is, I actually want to make a proposal of an intervention that can assist in ensuring that at the end of the day, this service delivery is achieved. Because it's not about us, it's about the people. And remember, it's this people first policy. It's a policy, principle policy, people first policy, okay? Now, I want to appeal to the department to look at an alternative way of dealing with these grants, but making sure that grants reach the people and then the benefit from the grants, because the main reason for the grant is to assist in ensuring that people live a better life. Now, I know that you've got an intervention strategy for those departments or your department or municipalities that do not perform well, that of an administration. Now, the one that I want to propose so that we ensure that we still achieve in terms of service delivery is, can't you then second somebody from the department to go and monitor on why is this grant, you know, that whatever that would have cost the stocking. Go and monitor, sit down with them and craft maybe a fast-tracking or a fast-tracking plan, so that this money at the end does go down. Because the problems with you keeping this is too broad. You don't get service delivery, you also have an under-accreditation. So which means it's also not a solution. Because there are problems all over. On your side and also on the service delivery, at the service delivery point. So we'll appreciate if you can just think about it and then... okay, yeah, I think that's what I wanted to raise. Otherwise, I'm going to allow you your closing statement. Oh, there's also the follow-up, sorry.
I think I want to support the statement of the chair and other members who have spoken before. But, you know, I would like to suggest, Chairperson, that the treasurer give us the list of those municipalities that are not performing, and we, before we say he must break the law, we must do our work. We must call those municipalities with their MECs for local government. Because in the last APEC conference,
MEC or
MEC?
MEC, okay.
With member of executive council.
Yeah.
Because in the last APEC conference, we discussed this issue, and it was observed that national department, that is the Department of Local Government, COPTA, and Treasury, are very serious in helping municipalities. But somehow, MECs don't seem to be coming to the party. And yet, there is a exception in the Municipal Finance Management Act that says all upper spheres must assist the municipalities. Because I can imagine the municipality falling apart, the Department of Culture in the province not worried at all. It's a constitutional obligation. They have to assist these people. So it is not just Treasury and Culture alone. We need to have these municipalities with the MEC consent and if they fall under a district and the mayor of that district under one roof. So that we sort out this thing, so that we don't just look at it, because Treasury has got its own mandate, and there are things that MECs should be doing.
All right. We take note of the input by Honorable Member Shoppes Tole. I will then ask him to give us a closing statement.
Honorable Chair, we have had this sentiment. We understand. We understand, for instance, on the issue of stopping, which was the last one. We will give a list as we had undertaken to do so. Mine is to, from the bottom of my heart, thank the committee for your understanding that I had to be in two meetings today, but also just a very robust but engagement that enables us to go back and improve the way we do things, and be cautious that, as the Honorable Chair says, we continue to play as effectively as possible the role that we are entrusted with playing within the system. And we don't take lightly coming here, and we always try our best to listen when spoken to. Thank you very much.
Well, on behalf of the committee, I'd like to thank you for the informative briefing, but also and the adequate responses. I'd also like to thank the honorable members for their robust engagement and interrogation of the National Treasury reports, financial and non-financial treasury report. I will just highlight some key issues emanating from the meeting. The committee welcomes the many positive contributions that the department is making towards the NDP and attaining targets, including liberating much-needed investment, meeting government liquidity requirements, ensuring all procurement plans are published on the new e-tender portal, training staff in the implementation of financial management reforms, and others. We urge you to keep this up, as the committee is interested in seeing visible impact, or bigger impact. There is impact, but we want to rise to greater heights. Now, however, the committee wishes to see significant improvement on the job fund, with specific emphasis on tracking geographic distribution and focus on more employment-intensive and technology-intensive sectors. The committee also notes with concern some over and under expenditures in various programs of the department. Various funding prayers and wishes to impress upon the department must always remain the role model in our broad public finance system, the role model. Now, the committee generally views compliance with laws and regulations as important, especially with regards to intensification of oversight for radical transformation of our society and sustaining our public finance system. Radical transformation. The NDP also brings in innovation in ensuring that we achieve this radical socio-economic transformation. Indeed, complementary oversight and best practice is that Parliament works hand in hand with committees, and the input is appreciated. Overall, the committee views National Treasury as a valued and critical partner and is in support of the aim of ensuring sustainable public and fiscal risk, supporting sustainable employment, supporting infrastructure development, and ensuring economically integrated cities and communities. Lastly, we'd like the Department of National Treasury to reconsider the withholding and find an amicable way of ensuring that the grant reaches the service delivery point, and the service delivery point uses the grant efficiently and effectively. So you'll see, we'll find something in between there to make sure that these two and also continue to achieve meeting the treasury note. And I know who said the treasury note, just meeting the treasury note. Thank you very much. Thank you, indeed, we had fruitful, constructive, and meaningful engagement. The meeting between ourselves is urgent. Honorable members, I would like to consult you for the next, just 5 minutes of your time, please, for the next CP.